This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Hello, Houston, Galveston, and the world. Happy Louie. This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. We sing it the third or the fourth. We always get into this debate.
It's Saturday.
Yeah, it's whatever day. You know what day it is. If you don't, you're as lost as I am. This is After Hours. As I said, my name is Chris Harrison. I'll be your co-executive producer for some of the evening.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm the other one. And I, too, love to be queer. Happy Louie!
Happy Louie. For those of you who don't know, it's... Well, get out from under the rock. It's Let Us Entertain You Weekend.
33rd annual Let Us Entertain You Weekend. Yes, indeed. Festivities are still going on at Mary's.
Naturally.
For another hour or so. Until they kick everybody out.
Yeah, until the TABAC. One of those alphabet or agencies comes in and goes, no.
And tomorrow, of course, it's at Rich's.
Wrong.
Ripcord. Sunday is Rich's.
You have to forgive us in there. We're so used to doing this Saturday night.
Yes.
So we're used to... Automatically, it'll go to, you know, we're supposed to, you know, getting ready for the show.
Okay, before we get to the After Hours quickie, all the folks we've got in there, I have one announcement to make, and it's about Nibble, Night in Black Leather 2006. It's benefiting the Cult 45 Stone Soup Fund, and that's happening Saturday, March the 18th at 9 p.m. at the Ripcord. There's going to be a silent auction, ASL provided, and come early to view the silent auction items. That's put on by Don Gill Productions each and every year.
Since you said ASL, I signed it for the listeners.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure they appreciated that. One other thing is, I've been...
You only said one click.
I've been going to the Lazarus House, you know, kind of to build up muscle.
Well, you've been going to Lazarus House since he lived there.
Hey.
Strange, I'm feeling
better. No, but it's working out pretty well, and... the thing that, you know, when you're working out, you have to look at your protein. So they said, well, how about a protein? Not that protein.
And back to Louie. My God, we're going to use a segue from one acting to another.
So I hopped over to the Houston Buyers Club this afternoon and saw Fred. He's in there, hey, Jimmy, what are you up to? And he just showed me the stuff I needed. The great thing about the Houston Buyers Club is not only do you get vitamins and minerals and all that kind of stuff cheaply, where you pull their mics down.
Your guys' mics are on you now. Now they're down.
Oh,
talk freely amongst yourselves.
There you go. Now, the great place about that is that they're not out to sell you something.
Yeah.
You know, you go in, you tell them what they need, you need, and they point you in the right direction. It's not like one of those regular places that sell that kind of thing.
Oh. David, answer the phone. It's community radio. We lost our computer due to a virus.
I know.
I think it was straight people.
I don't know that David can answer the phone out there yet. Oh, well.
Hey, if it's important, just hold. We'll be with you eventually.
Ooh. Okay. Well, let's go to our guests.
Your mics are on.
We kind of have, anyway. Who have we got in the house tonight?
Dead silence. well, we have the Colt 45s. We have Jackie here from Marisa's, and we have a couple of guests here also.
Cool.
My name is Falcon, and I'm here to introduce the president of the Colt 45, Stephen Bunch. Take it away, Stephen.
Yay!
Hey, Stephen.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And you're
Thank
wearing
you, Chris.
You're wearing actually considerably more clothing than I saw you in earlier.
Yes. Normally, when I come to KPFT 90.1 radio, listens to you.
God, I hate it when people read the signs.
Freeze over here.
One of these days, you're going to read the sign that says what words you can't say on the air.
That's what I just pointed to.
I wear considerably that. Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been when I was up doing registration.
Anyway.
I was doing registration, too. You meet the people first. That's why you do registration.
Stephen normally, you know, grants me nice favors by showing up in his kilt.
We can't say kilt. That's another radio station. But they're not owned by the enemy.
No, they're not. No.
Well, my Scottish-style garment is at the dry cleaners. I had a stain I had to get removed.
I can just imagine.
And back to the
you and Monica.
Okay.
You got your finger on that red button.
Back to Louis. Oh gosh. So what's going on with Colt 45s? I see this big fundraiser coming up.
Well, if I might say something too, we have another one of our Colt members. He's a radio virgin.
Oh, no. Michael is a radio virgin.
Yes, Michael Hicks, secretary of the Colt 45s.
Mm-hmm. I have seen him on stage.
What bookstore?
Pretty sure they say they've seen him on the internet.
Oh, no, the tacky on the store. Tacky way is going, yeah, now I recognize you. Okay.
Could you shove a rose through the hole? I love you.
Well, show me that rosebud. Yeah.
You've already mentioned one of the things we have going on in March. That's where the Colt 45s are beneficiary of Nibble this year. And that's fabulous. It's always great. Don Gill, anything Don Gill does is always fabulous. And for them to help us,
that's
especially
right.
Now when we need the help coming off a tumultuous year, a lot of 501c3 charities have that. It's always great to get that kind of support.
Yeah.
In April, we have Southern Country. Houston is also doing a fundraiser with the BRB on the 7th and 8th. So we have a lot of friends.
The
7th well
and 8th?
The 7th and the 8th. They have their Sweetheart, God, I'm gonna slay this.
Sweetheart in Texas.
Yeah, the 14th annual Sweetheart in Texas.
Wow, nice.
As well as with a lot of having a lot of friends, we are going to be beneficiary of Drag Bingo.
Hey,
through Reese's.
Hey, that's great.
In March, so we've got a lot of friends out there. You couldn't survive in this town if you didn't have friends, and we've got a few.
And the Colt 45s do a great job for the community in providing, well, you tell it.
Let's have Michael do it. He's the virgin. Let's,
okay. Michael, what does Cult 45s do?
Yeah, what does the Cult 45s
do? Yeah, Michael, what does Cult 45s do?
What did you do tonight, Michael, to help introduce yourself?
And I don't want to go there. And I don't mean...
Isn't that called Texas pinning?
Oh. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's... Yeah.
That was not a Texas pinning.
It does not benefit the Cult 45.
Well, I don't know.
It benefits Michael.
And once again, we're back to profile.
Making friends and getting support from the community, but, you know, that's in a different aspect.
So, what was this rumor I heard about you were going to do a Texas pinning on the air tonight?
Well, you know, I feared that you talked about it, but I think the viewers needed to see one on the radio.
Oh, we could describe it.
I've got
Okay, we got in the back there.
We have done blow by blow, play by play.
Okay, well, darn, been done.
No, of other things, no. Not of pinning.
Yes.
But no, but going back to what the Cult 45 is
yes,
do, we kind of digress here. For some reason, whenever we get together with Jimmy, it's like we digress a lot.
We call it Amtrak Radio.
That happens, yeah.
Okay, so the Cult 45 is a 501c3 charity, and one of our main focus is the ATF Fund, which is the AIDS Trouble Fund. We provide assistance for rent and utilities for people in need.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen, go ahead and talk about our other two funds real quick.
Oh.
I'm going to throw this on you.
On me. Well, first on the AIDS Trouble Fund, a lot of people know that AIDS Trouble Fund was unique in that it was a last resort fund. It was either when you ran out with other organizations or that you could not get funds from or the other organizations. The cults were there for a lot of people to help them with rent and utility assistance. Stone Soup Fund, well, we won't digress in the history, but as of recent times, we have raised money to help out AIDS Foundation Houston's Stone Soup Pantry, which is a very great organization, and they do a lot of help with people. Our role has changed over the years, but we've always managed to have a nice partnership with them. And I think people know of those two as the most recognizable of the Cult funds, but we also have one, the Till Thacker III Fund, named after one of our members that passed away. Till Thacker, it sounds bad, but it's kind of a catch-all fund. We helped through Till Thacker, we could help people that were partners of people who possibly have passed away from AIDS, help with some of their problems. So maybe they didn't qualify with organizations because they themselves did not have AIDS, but we could help ease some of their problems, as well as it's been a burial fund. It's helped with a lot of different
It's been kind of a catch-all fund. We recently activated for Hurricane Katrina. Yeah.
Oh.
But it's kind of our catch-all fund, and, you know, if people need assistance that doesn't fall within certain criteria of Stone Soup and ATF, of course, we kind of turn to the Till Thacker and see if we can qualify them through that.
Well, and because of the way Till Thacker and some of the other charities are set up through Till Thacker, that's how we're able, twice a year with the help of PWA Holiday Charities, to distribute funds that they graciously give us to our clients, our active clients, for the Christmas in July, as well as the Christmas gifts that they give to people. And that allows us to act as a conduit for several other organizations in that aspect, too. It's a nice thing to be able to do, not only to do things in your name, but allow other people to do something good as well.
So, Michael, what is it that you do with the Colts?
He's in PR.
You mean outside of Louis?
oh, yes, please.
Well, I'm the newly elected secretary.
Oh, okay, so you've got the big job.
Take a memo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He is the new Jane Hathaway.
Oh. Well, I have seen him on stage, and he looked similar.
Thanks.
Yeah, we just had our elections in February. We got a new board.
Mm-hmm.
Well, basically, the three members of the board are still here. But we do have a new member, which is Michael as the secretary. Good. Stephen Bunch is still the president.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Allen is the vice president. And I'm the treasurer.
Yay!
Yay!
Count de Monet, Count de Monet.
There you go.
And I just want to point out, we also have a few other guests with us right now.
Yes.
I have, number one, a really good friend of mine from Orlando, Florida, and brought her in so she can kind of give a female Louis Virgin, Virgin, play-by-play on Louis.
Okay.
So she can tell you what's going on. And
well,
exactly,
we got a Louis Virgin on this side, too, with Lynn.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, did Lynn pin anybody? Because she did.
Oh. So, I think Lynn knew about the pinning part.
Well,
her... You tell me the fun part.
It's a Louis love connection. This is
so, Hoops is here from Florida.
Well, love.
And we also have Treasure here.
Hey, Treasure!
Hello!
Yeah.
She has been here. She's been here before. Oh,
she is
yeah.
not a virgin.
No.
I'm sorry, she is not a Louis virgin.
Seasoned veteran.
But, you know, one thing we kind of wanted to get across as far as Louis, because we're going to do a little bit of PR and everything tonight, being that it is Louis, we would like to see a huge, more of a female showing at it.
You bet.
Yes, we would.
and so would Lynn. She mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know,
how does the Texas pinning work for the women?
About the same thing, just
very
that the West
carefully.
State is in a different spot.
Higher up, yeah.
And trust me, I got to view it firsthand with Hoops. I explained it, and she did it.
Oh,
and of course,
you had to go there.
Seeing
well,
women.
Yeah, and
well,
I,
we saw plenty of Hoops tonight.
Yeah.
And to demonstrate this, we have a pie chart.
And I don't know if I mentioned it, but we do have Jack Adams here from Arisa's. Jackie,
yes.
Evelyn Thorne, the Dowager Monarch.
Well, let me put on my PWA Holiday Charities hat for a moment as treasurer. One of the major things that PWA Holiday Charities does in conjunction with Colt 45s, as Stephen mentioned, is the Christmas in July and then the Christmas at Christmas handout to the active clients of the Colt 45 client list.
Right.
And the thing that... you know, has really, really been an incentive for me as far as working in that area, are the letters that we get, the thank you letters. Granted, you know, we may send out, you know, they may have 100 clients or so forth that we send out checks and so forth to, but every once in a while we'll get a couple letters back. And that's really what makes it all worthwhile. I can remember one year, it was a real, real hot summer that we had about 2-3 years ago. And we got a letter back in the latter part of August from a lady who was one of their clients that said, you know, this money could not have come at a better time because my window air conditioner quit and I had to have it, you know, had to have it repaired. And that money paid for it.
Wow. Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you imagine that the summer she would have had without that?
It would have been miserable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, especially here in Texas.
Yeah.
And if anybody does need assistance, you can go right on for our website, which is colt45s.org, colt45s.org. There is an application on there for assistance through ATF.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also learn more about the Colt 45s. What are you laughing about, Michael? I don't trust these two, you know?
I always thought the ATF was alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
We have
We assist in everything, okay?
I like her already.
But
we had to get rid of our Colt ATF jackets.
The navy blue with the big yellow letters on the back.
Give me the target.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of yellow, that's the song we opened up with tonight from Boy Roberts' Club 65 Hanky Panky album.
Yeah, that was a good song.
Yeah.
I was kind of enjoying that.
Yeah, that's one of my two favorites on there.
Yeah.
So
I'd like to address a question to Stephen and Falcon.
Sure.
Are y'all planning on reinstating the associate memberships for the Colt 45s?
That is actually in discussion right now. We're bringing it up to our membership, and we're going to... Obviously, it's something that we have to put into our bylaws and into our rules.
Well, the thing about it was that at one point in time, I was an associate member of the Colt 45s, and the reason I was an associate rather than a full-fledged member is because all the other stuff that I'm involved with, I didn't feel that it was right for me to try and be a full-fledged member if I could not devote the time to it felt was required for membership.
And just, we've been throwing the idea of that around, especially since we have our anniversary coming up. We would like to see more people, obviously, with our patches. It's good PR for us. It's good to have the community involvement out there, so anybody in the community, if they see that Colt 45 patch on them, even if it's a small one, and they can learn about the ATF and Stone Soup and Tilt Hacker Funds, everybody's educated when they become a member of what we do. And we were talking about that, and obviously an associate member would be basically our citizen advisory board for ATF.
Well, in my case, as an associate member, I was called upon when you all had your runs and so forth like that to come in and help out in that area.
But, it does take us a little bit of time to work out the bylaws. And we're working on that right now. It's
great.
Yes, and let us know when you get that ironed out, because we'd like to give that word out too to folks that they can become associate members.
We need to bring this up before our membership committee.
Okay.
And Stephen, do you want to talk more about the 30th anniversary run?
30th, is that coming up?
Yeah.
Oh, that's June 9th, 10th, and 11th.
Oh.
Run pins, food, fun, frivolity, education, and I think if not only a lot of the Colts in this room and some of the people that aren't here as well as the community, if it maybe we could pull it off, maybe a little bit of walk through history.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of the people that we haven't seen in a long time would come out for 30 and say, hey, there's a lot of Colts that people don't know that we're ever Colts. So we're hoping for not only a fundraiser per se, but it's a celebration too.
Good.
Celebration of Houston and the people that have helped us for 30 years.
Yes.
It starts off, we have some of the things that we need to iron out, basically to see who's available or what venues are available, but it looks like it'll always start off at the BRB with our registration, always has. And there's stops along the way and fun and lots of involvement from all the clubs. We get a lot of clubs come out and support and help. And this year, it being a 3-day run instead of just a 2 or 3 hour to show, that lends us to have a little bit more leeway as far as getting some involvement.
I have a question, Stephen, about this run. Do you have to run or can you walk?
Well,
I think a lot of them crawl.
You can crawl, baby. Most of them are going to be crawling after the cocktail party.
I've seen it, Louie.
And I'm not even going there.
Just because they're on their knees doesn't mean they're crawling.
Some of us have the Rascal scooters, so no, you don't have
to. Yeah, it should be. We're playing all the events right now, but the data's secured.
Great.
And we're working, basically, just like you said, we're just working on the venues and getting all the activities planned.
Yeah.
One of the ideas we tossed around was kind of a community dunking booth, and we get like a high profile person, say if they had like a radio program or something like that.
Chris would love to do that.
Well, like anyone in our community actually knows this show.
They know it.
Oh,
they
you'd be surprised.
Know it.
Maybe we could import one of those people from Atlanta who are over on the CC station.
Oh, please.
It was actually a real person.
Yeah. Dinner party one? Oh, sorry.
But we were kind of... We threw some ideas around for kind of a theme.
Yeah.
A theme for the show.
Dinner party one. A little slide goes up and down and makes it
and I keep...
Yes, Falcon.
Yeah. Keep going, guys. Keep going. This is a visual I don't want to see.
Hey, you're in the corner.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going
going to go there. No, okay. What words can I not say here?
Well, you can't say.
What's the list again? No, and I think we kind of came up with the theme of doing kind of like a Western carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do want to get the community involved in that and do some more twisted games. You know, a Western carnival, but with a twisted idea
this
to it.
Crew?
Oh, well, I'm
twisted?
There.
Oh, you got to be kidding.
I am there.
You know, back.
You're going to have a stemming the rose contest?
Well, you know, a good example is an idea we kind of came up with of a pie toss, of course, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What's your name?
You took the words right out of my mouth. No, but instead of having, you know, a face and a clown or something like that, we're going to think of more like a horse's rear end.
Ooh.
So, something like that.
You shouldn't talk about Stephen like that. Right now.
Well, I got to get the feeling that all the board members have to do time in that little booth there. So, well, I'm sure we'll all be taking our turns, you know, getting our faces.
I didn't know you could get the governmental officials to
creamed. I knew
get your rear end creamed.
Exactly. That's what it is.
And also, while we are, I'd like to take this moment to interrupt.
Yes,
do it. If you are a high-profile person, such as perhaps maybe you were president of another organization, a business owner.
A dowager monarch.
A dowager monarch. They would like to be in this donkey booth, or perhaps, you never know, maybe mud wrestling. Who knows?
My dowager emperor will not allow me to wear my rainbow bikini, so.
You said dowager empress, and Chris just started pulling money out of his pocket.
I was going to say, I think we can get Christopher's permission on this one. So, as a matter of fact, I think we can get the president of Aresis to, let's talk to Bob Boughton about that. Get Jackie in a dunking booth.
Jackie, hell, let's get Bob.
That would be great.
Ooh.
That would be great.
Yeah.
But the idea also is, you know, of course, to raise money and,
sure.
and to help out. And,
sure.
you know, one thing we always like to point out, we have no administrative costs. Mm-hmm. You know, everything we do is all volunteer. And it's a lot of work. And
sure.
We definitely could always use donations. Which, if you want to donate money, Stephen, take it away. What is
that? Would be www.cope45s.org where you can get in touch with us, or you could call us on the telephone 713-526-6077.
Wait a minute. If I'm writing that down, I got lost. Try that again.
713.
For the alcoholically impaired.
526.
Mm-hmm.
6077.
6077.
For those of you scoring at home, or even if you're alone.
Yeah. Well, gang.
Back to Louis.
Back to Louis. We got the Hatch folks waiting in the wings.
Oh, great.
Houston Area Teen Coalition of Homosexuals.
Not anymore.
What is it?
It's just Hatch.
Just Hatch. Queer teens. Okay.
They started adding too many letters to the alphabet.
Oh, yeah, that I and the Q and the...
Yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, there is no I. Well, I won't go there.
So keep us posted, because we really want to push this carnival thing coming up.
That'd be fabulous.
Because we got to get that on people's calendars right now, because June is such a packed month with everything else going on.
Well, I believe it is the weekend before Father's Day, so
okay.
I don't think we're competing with too many people, and we kind of checked the calendar pretty good on that.
Good.
But yeah, it's the 9th, 10th, and 11th of June, and we'll have more information on our website coming up here pretty quick.
Good. Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah, before you go, can I say just one more thing?
Yes, please.
And from my heart, it's fabulous that not only the Cult 45s, but a lot of different organizations are able to come out and explain themselves and put a little plug in here. And I would say find a charity or find an organization that you like to support. But, and this is not meant to impede upon you, but don't forget to help support this radio station, this program, when the time comes.
Thank you.
Because we would not be here if these two fabulous people, or three, if I can't see anybody else back there, did not allow us to come on and spread our word in some fashion. And I always appreciate that, and as we all do.
Thank you. Don't make me look to the left. My Louis pin stabs me. I've got to get leather because this pin is just too... taking out my jugular.
Well, I was going to say, they pinned you right next to the jugular.
I pinned it there because of the... someone offered to do a Texas pinning, and I said, why? but no, it's... because the pins are designed for to go through leather or Levi, It always leaves such a giant hole.
I don't want to touch on that one. Hold on.
We won't explain Texas pinning, but I did notice the pin is not upside down either, if you know the connotation on that.
No.
Well, you know, technically the pin cannot be right side up unless you, you know, consummate that pinning with that particular person.
So I was
just curious about that because I noticed the pin was right side up.
Why is mine sideways?
I don't want anyone to think about that.
Well, I think the person who helped pin that on there would know the connotations and all that.
Okay, who was it?
Lloyd.
Oh, yeah. Lloyd, if you can hear the sound of my voice. And I know you can.
Yes. Okay.
Louis Weekend continues tomorrow morning at the 6:11 at 10-ish?
10:30.
Registration goes till noon.
Mm-hmm.
Then you head over to the Ripcord for the Buschetti lunch.
Yep.
That goes at 1.
At 1, and then...
and the Tiffle Tea. That's the first ladies.
Yes.
Where they don their bonnets or some facsimile thereof. And
that's at 4.
That's at 4.
And some of us have experienced that one before.
Then you get a couple hours of rest before you head over to the BRB for the barbecue dinner.
Yep.
And during that time is when the Colt 45s and Arisas will be doing their cocktail parties.
In Southern Country. Rainbow Wranglers.
Yeah.
And air conditioning. The first time we'll hit air conditioning that day, so that'll be...
yeah. Yeah, so, and you know, wear your boots and get ready to dance a little bit and...
and have fun.
Have some fun at the BRB. Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
That is our home bar for, I think, all three of us. The Rainbow Wranglers, are all four of us. Rainbow Wranglers, Southern Country, Arisas, and Cool 45s.
We love the BRB. Thank you, Craig. Yes, everybody. Get well, Twister.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to some music, Chris.
Kind of a theme song sort of thing for Louis.
Yeah.
A little bit of Erasure.
Yes.
Gimme.
Moment mal. Ich bin ganz atemlos. Und
in my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a
If you think HIV/AIDS is no longer a problem, think again. In Houston, every 8 hours, someone becomes infected with HIV. One in 90 Houstonians is HIV positive. There's still no cure, but you can protect yourself and others by getting tested and learning more about this deadly disease. You can help. Join AIDS Foundation Houston in the fight against HIV/AIDS on Sunday, March 12th for the 17th annual AIDS Walk Houston. With your participation, we can give thousands of men, women, and children a reason for hope. For more information about AIDS Walk Houston, call 713-403-WALK or log on to www.AIDSWalkHouston.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Whoa, it's the Hatch segment, and I'm here to tell you I haven't seen so much estrogen in the room in years.
That was mean.
No.
Oh, true. Trust me, we can get meaner.
I'm given a name by someone over at Hollywood Tonight. We are now the Dykes of the Round Table.
Whoa.
That was not very nice.
Rainbow power.
There you go. There you go. No, it's always a problem on this show and other overnight shows of getting females on the air.
Well, you got us.
I think we make up for them tonight.
Good. Good.
I think so, too.
So who have we got?
Well, first we're going to go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Colleen, and I'm 20.
Hi, I'm Sean, and I'm 16.
I'm Katie, and I'm 15.
I'm Beth, and I'm 20.
Pamela Page, and I'm 17.
I'm Janie, and I'm 18.
I'm Greenlee, and I'm 18.
And I'm Sierra. I'm 16.
And our facilitator for the night, Brendan.
Oh, yeah, I'm Brendan.
All right. So you're not in the room.
I know, right?
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that, thank you.
But yeah, actually, our topic for the night is lesbianism, specifically lesbian relationships. And so that's why we have so many women in the room tonight.
And Sean.
And Sean is our male perspective. We'll hear from him later.
Hot diggity dog.
But to start off, we want to talk about some of our announcements, some of the things that are going on at Hatch. First off, we've got Hatch Prom is coming up in June. This is always our biggest fundraiser of the year and also one of our biggest events. It's free to all youth under 21, and we are currently beginning planning for it. So if anyone would like to come to Hatch or would like more information, you can call us at 713-529-3590 or go to our website at www.hatchyouth.org. We also recently have a Yahoo group and a MySpace group. The Yahoo group can be found under Hatch_Houston, and the MySpace group is under Hatch Youth, and that would be H period, A period, et cetera, et cetera. So make sure that you put in the periods or you won't be able to find it. Our other big event that we're doing planning for is Pride. Hatch always has a Pride Parade float every year, and that is a process that we begin early so that we can get it finished in time for the parade. But
hey, Hatch won the award last
year. Exactly, yeah, last year. I think it was Best Political Message, that it?
Yeah.
So, but we were very proud of that after all those hours of folding those little plastic flowers. I want to cry.
That made me sad, folding those.
But to begin our topic for the night, we want to talk about female relationships. First off, we're going to be talking about lesbian and bisexual relationships and how they're different from heterosexual relationships. Beth is groaning because she's our token bisexual, and we will be referring to her throughout the night. We've also got lesbian and bi versus gay male relationships. Sean?
Huh?
I'm going to need you to talk then.
Coolness.
All right, but first off, what do y'all think of lesbian relationships, and how do you think they're different from straight relationships?
Because there's lesbians involved.
Okay, now,
thank you, Captain Obvious.
Is this the aspect of, like, their, what they hold dear to them, like, what they look for? Are you talking about that, or you want to...
However you want to interpret the question. First of all, we can start off with, what do you look for in a partner? As far as traits and, you know, personality traits, how they look.
Okay. So physically and emotionally, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like every other person.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of universal.
This is a
universal.
Personal question.
Yeah.
Personal question.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you don't have, like, everyone says they have a type, but, you mean, you're like...
But what do you personally... I've heard you describe your perfect girlfriend to me, so...
Yeah, go for it. I've heard this 1,000 times.
From me?
Yeah.
Okay, well, now I have to, like, try and match those things. They change, like, every day.
Yeah, they do. You're like, I like blondes and Hispanics. And then you're like, I want a blonde... Who's Hispanic and has blue or green eyes?
You know, okay, well,
kind of odd.
She used to be short, but skinny's good.
I thought this was my thing.
Hey, now.
Okay, we've already established I like blondes and Hispanics. All right, you know.
I was trying to demonstrate that you're country.
Yeah. And so, you know,
chef.
Chef. And so, I don't know. I like girls short in stature, you know, kind of like petite, you know, frame, but not like small, like skinny girls, you know. Forgive me. I'm kind of wheezy tonight. I'm recovering from a respiratory infection. It sounds worse than it really is. I know, right? And I'm kind of petite in stature, you know, but not like all scrawny and whatnot. I prefer like long hair and, you know... I don't know, really. I'm sorry. I use my hands when I talk.
What do y'all look for, not just in looks, but also in personality traits? Like, what would you look for in a partner?
Sounds like creepy wanted ads, you know? Like, yeah. I like someone who's sweet and caring. I like, you know, people I can connect with. I mean, I'm not going to go and, you know, get someone that's, or like, you know, even entertain, like, trying to establish a relationship with someone who is, like quote-unquote, you know, out of my league, you know, like, I wouldn't want to date someone who I can't connect with intellectually. That would just frustrate me, and I would be like, hey, here's a book. Why don't you try reading it, you know?
General opinion. Do you think looks or... personality traits are more important?
Personality
in
traits.
In lesbian relationships, that is.
Yes. To me, it personality.
Do y'all agree?
Yeah.
Does anyone disagree?
I agree. I agree.
I mean...
So, wholeheartedly, personality?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Well, not all the way. I mean, there's got to be some physical attraction.
I mean, you can't just be like, you know, it's a lie to say, you know, like, I only go on personality. Because, I mean, if they look like, you know, a dumpster slug, you're going to say that. You're like, oh, sweetie. Can you take a shower and comb your hair?
But how important is it to you?
On a scale of 1 to 10 or whatever, I'd have to say just like straight down the middle. I like average looking girls. You know, I'm like, you know, I don't, you know, I just like average looking, you know, individuals, maybe like a 5'6", 4'5", 5'6", around there. I'm not trying to look for like some like superstar 10 plus, you know, I'm like, because then I'd feel like intimidated and weirded out. And
okay, I have a question for y'all. Mm-hmm. Now, in the lesbian community or whatever you want to call it, among lesbians, do you consider yourself to be attractive?
No.
Okay.
No.
Heck yeah.
I love you, Jenny. I got her pimp, by the way.
I got a resident pimp.
You didn't know that.
She goes by Bob.
The soft butch is in.
I gotta be honest. I do.
Okay. Oh, that's
great. Good they have a high self-esteem like that.
She looks a little like Avril Lavigne with long hair.
She does.
What about you, Sean?
What?
Do you, in the gay community, do you consider yourself attractive?
Sean's hot. You know what?
Oh, yeah.
Sean
Yeah, he does.
But, okay, moving on. Would you consider yourself attractive in the heterosexual community?
No.
Yes. No.
No. Would you? Okay. No. Now we're getting a whole bunch of
things. Let me think about you.
No. What do you think the difference is?
I think it's easier with girls.
Okay, well, why do you think it's easier, though?
I don't know. It just seems that girls don't care as much.
No, I think it's because they understand the troubles that you go through in trying to make yourself look so good for guys who don't really give a give a crap.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that is a little different.
Women, when you date other women, you don't try to hold them to these high ideals that society has. I mean, I think we try to hold ourselves to those ideals, but when you're looking for a partner, you don't place as much emphasis on it. And then also, supposedly, women care less about looks than men do in general. Yeah. So that's not to say that we don't care.
Just care less. No, then you're just saying that I don't care how you look. You're ugly, girlfriend.
Dumpster slugs.
Just as y'all were saying, that personality is more important to you. You know, that's what you look for.
Well, why don't we trace back and let more people answer? Because I think Beth was the only one who really answered that question.
Which one?
About what's important to you in finding a partner.
Personality is important to me.
Like, what characteristics specifically?
Well, I think women especially want someone that's, of course, going to be very intimate and, you know, more about the emotional, more, you know, with the emotions and with the just the physical sex. You know?
We
still enjoy sex, but it's not, you know, the center of the whole. You know, relationship about how good the sex is.
But in some cases it is, you know. In some cases the only reason that lesbians is together or are together is to have sex.
But I've never heard Pamela using correct
My heart fluttered. But anyway, I mean, in a lot of my friends, I've seen that where it's just been about sex, and until you mention that to them, that's all they really do think about. But when you finally, like, bring it up to them, they're all like, no, we love each other. And, you know, I've had a lot of friends do that.
Sidetracked. Yeah. Do y'all think lesbian bed death exists?
I wouldn't know, because I think I'm the only
lesbian bed death.
What is that?
Because, like, when you're in relationships for long enough, you just stop having sex. Like,
I wouldn't think so. I mean,
if that happens to me, I'm leaving the relationship.
I don't think it should get to that point, you know? Yeah, it's like you're losing, like, you know, that intimacy between the two of you. It's just, it's sad.
I don't think it should.
Yeah, I was like, you need that. Other than that, you're just like, best friends are living together.
It's like being roommates. You know, a lot of people, we were talking about the difference between lesbian or female bisexual relationships and how they're different from either straight relationships or gay relationships. And how differently do y'all think male or gay male relationships and lesbian relationships are viewed?
Well, I've never been a gay male per se.
I think that from what you're in another life.
I think that gay males, all the gay males that I know have the theory that they have to look just as good, and they hold themselves to the standard that straight women hold themselves to. Mm-hmm. In that same type of sense that the guy only wants the really attractive guy or female, or, you know, male or female. But I don't know, a lot of gay males that I know, like I said, hold themselves to that, while lesbians are more, I guess, into the political right or the emotional understanding of each other. Because I think a lot of lesbians that I know, when they're finding partners, I mean, when I was searching for my partner, I was looking for somebody who was, you know, could be calm and serene, but could also know when to have fun, could be serious and intellectual, and also very, very funny and very odd at times, but also somebody who was there for me all the time. And it seems like with gay men, it's almost that with youth gay men that I see almost stereotype coming true, in that they are a little promiscuous and they are a little
insecure all the time.
They are a little insecure and outgoing more. I guess they try to come up to you and be like, hi, and then they're like your new best friend. Mm-hmm. And I've had that happen to me so many times, especially since I've, you know, really gotten involved with the gay community. So
what I've noticed is a lot of people Well, because you were talking about how lesbians are generally more accepted by society than gay men are.
Mm-hmm.
But the trade-off for that is that a lot of lesbian relationships aren't considered valid, or they think that any type of intimacy that we share isn't actually sex, that it's all just foreplay. And
well, I think they should let lesbians finger them, and then maybe they would know what that feels like.
Thank you, Phil. Sorry.
It's because most people don't know the mechanics of lesbian sex, or homosexual sex, rather, which consists of, stop me if I get too graphic, oral sex and manual penetration. And I guess when people think of men, penetration, they think of, you know, the...
A penis.
Yes, into...
You can say that on the radio. Vagina. A penis on the radio.
It's a small ball.
Penis and vagina and everything else you want.
Hardcore.
Anatomy.
Although some women prefer to use, you know, the can I say...
toys.
Yes, toys. Not all. So I guess it's... people do see that as just foreplay, but I mean... a person's own, what gets you happy is your own thing. And, I mean, who are we to judge what someone else likes?
Well, but how does that make you feel that people might not consider our relationships valid?
I mean, it really does upset me because, I mean, who are you to judge me on what I do behind closed doors in my bedroom with my lover?
Mm-hmm.
It's my business and, you know, forget you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the issue here is that lesbians' relationships aren't taken seriously, in that people will see lesbians and think, oh, they're friends who kiss and make out to please men. And they don't think that lesbians actually exist. Like, straight men that I know have it in their heads that lesbians exist only for their pleasure. Their viewing pleasure.
Yeah.
And possibly interaction.
That's reflected in pornography.
Yes.
It's very mean. And
it is.
You know,
do you think the pornography stems from that belief? Or do you
hate
think
pornography.
That it's a belief that stems from the pornography?
So I don't
it's a
watch
belief that stems from the pornography.
So you think it's the way that we're... in the media, or
yes, because like you like in.
Go ahead.
No. Wait. Oh, beans.
Okay. Okay, well, see, one of the things I was thinking about was
at one of the award shows, musical award shows recently, the kiss between Madonna and Britney Spears was viewed lesbianic, and I was like, okay, no. Well, Melissa Etheridge got on camera or on the radio, or I forgot how I heard this, but she was talking about it, and she's like, yeah, I didn't really think that was full on lesbian action, but maybe next year. So and I'm just like, I think that having that view, the society has that view that, like, just seeing two girls kiss is lesbian. And so even, like, I have really good friends that I'm not in any way dating, that I kiss all the time, and not in a, like, making out way, but I'll kiss their cheek or their forehead or, you know, the tip of their nose.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that is that women are less afraid to be physically close to their friends, like show physical affection in ways that society doesn't really allow men to do the same thing because, you know, usually for fear of being perceived as gay.
Or persecuted in any other way.
But how do you think that changes when you actually are gay? Because I've noticed personally that in the gay community, people are so much more likely to hug. Really, I don't hug any of my straight friends, but, you know, somebody I've just met in the gay community will be like, hey, and they hug me, and I'm like, I've known you for 30 seconds.
Or they kiss you, and you're like...
That's strange.
Yeah.
Kind of odd.
You just saw you for the first time.
I can't remember your name.
Or, like, they'll try to kiss you on the lips, and I'm like, you know what? I don't know you that well.
No,
gay people can be a little too friendly sometimes.
A little bit, like over the top friendly at times. You're just like, you know, this personal bubble exists for a reason.
No, but back to lesbian relationships. We were talking about friendship being basically the core of lesbian relationships. Y'all agree with that?
I think that's true. Very much so.
With most.
They talk about the connection being...
I think with more of a relationship, it would be friends first, and then you move on to, like, a serious relationship.
Yeah, because...
But if it's just, like, you know, a little fling thing or
because
whatever...
Because it goes back, you know, because, like, when you're looking for a partner,
you're not, it's just like we said earlier, it's not really based on something very physical. It's, you know, more of an emotional thing that, you know, you get attached to this person by, you know, exploring their personality a little bit and just kind of like uncovering it, you know, like a I don't know, like a treasure hunt or something. I don't know. Analogies. And so the more you spend time with this person and, you know, you're befriending them, you're spending more time and you're hanging out, getting to know each other, that's when your feelings develop. It's not just like you're walking down the street and you're like, hey, that's a hot piece of nut. You know, and you're just like, hey,
no,
you know.
Someone likes that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes, you know, that's how you get the initial attraction, but, like, yeah, like, the lust is there because, you know, you can't just not lust after someone. It's just, like, humanly impossible. Yes, humanly impossible.
Well, yeah, do you think that that is what makes the difference between friendship and relationship?
Well, I think so.
Yes, I think that physical attraction does kind of make the difference between a friendship and a relationship.
Well, but I mean, not at all.
I have to do this, unfortunately, so I have to interrupt for a second.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM, and Galveston 89.5 FM.
That's good. Last time I used to say it all the time.
Yeah.
I usually do. My voice is kind of a little scratchy to go through it.
My world.
That's cool. Recording's nice.
Yeah.
You know, I think it is. I mean, because I have, like, you know, back, well, I don't know what the whole topic was, but, like, I have friends, you know, that I'm close to, and, you know, I've gotten to know very well, but it has to be some kind of, like, physical thing along with it. I don't know where I'm going with that. Somebody take it away.
No, I think personally, you can take that physical attraction and get to know someone and, you know, let the relationship build. Like, recently, there's this person I'm interested in, and it was basically physical attraction, and that's all it was. And I want to take it to the next level, so I'm talking to that person, getting to know that person, and maybe later ask that person out. But, I mean, it doesn't always have to start from a friendship. You can build on, you know, first physical attraction and then getting to know that person and discover the beauty on the inside as well as the outside.
I have a question to pose to all of y'all. When we were talking about personality traits and all the things that you look for in a partner, if you had to pick one thing that was most important to you in a relationship, what would it be?
Sincerity.
Sincerity, okay. What about you, Pamela?
No!
I'm going to say trust. That's my answer.
Yeah.
I would say understanding.
Understanding?
Yeah.
Oh,
beans. Well, I don't know because, Colleen.
I'm gonna go with Colleen on this one and say trust, because someone who doesn't trust you and you can't trust them, it's going to be hard to be sincere. It's going to be hard to be understanding. It's just going to be just initially difficult. We have...
Oh, no, that was me thinking of my idea.
We have one something.
Pamela had a light bulb and put a finger up because she was going to say,
you know,
I guess
Eureka.
I'll do this next time.
And so, I mean, if you don't have that trust, if you're, you know, uncomfortable or whatever, you're not going to be able to establish those other, you know, wonderful, you know, things you need in a relationship, you know, and it's just going to be... just kind of empty and kind of hollow in that area. And, of course, you know, you might love each other and have lots of feelings for each other, but if that trust isn't there, then it's just not going to work out.
I definitely think, I guess, mine would have to be honesty, because I know that in my relationship, which is a very complicated relationship, we have to be very honest all of the time. Which isn't hard to do. It's not like you're walking on eggshells. We're definitely not walking on eggshells with each other. But it's just, if I feel a certain way, like, I got really, I guess, involved with part... I went to a couple of parties one time, and some of my friends and I were, you know, we'd go out on school nights at, like, you know, till 4 in the morning, and I was struggling and everything. And, you know, my girlfriend just like, you know what? You need to get back into school or focus on it, because if you don't, you're going to end up getting hurt. And, you know, she was just really honest with me about that, and she's been going through some things recently that, you know, illness, physical problems, where I've having to be like, you know, I love you, and I want to be here for you, but I have to be honest with you. And, you know, sometimes I can't be there, and sometimes I just have to be honest and say, Babe, you're making this harder than it is. You know, you're making this harder than it has to be, and you can't do that.
No, did y'all start out as friends?
Actually, we met through my ex.
These are fun.
And, no, actually, all of us are still friends, still, like, after 2 years.
Oh, that brings up another question, but I'll ask that in a minute.
Okay, well, hold on, because I want to tell my story. But,
you
yeah.
called the lesbian epidemic, but
okay. No, me and my partner actually met through my ex, and... We, sorry, I don't normally say girlfriend, I say partner,
uh-huh.
But, me and my partner, yeah, she and I met through my ex, and we got to know each other on a very emotional level before we ever got to know each other on a very physical level. We knew each other I met her in February of 2 years ago, and...
2004.
You good in that? And we didn't actually start dating until... it's not really that long of a time. We didn't start dating until June, like, 27th. I don't know. It was a little while before we started dating, but we didn't ever have any physical contact until almost... I mean, into September of that year, so... It wasn't, I mean, it was a while.
Do you think relationships that begin on friendship are better than relationships that don't?
Not always.
No. Okay. What is your, why?
Because friendships that are built on relationships, I think there's always that fear that they're going to ruin their friendship. And so they have a fear that they can't actually be honest because then they feel like even if they do break up, they won't be friends. And a lot of people who start as friends want to keep that friendship.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And speaking of that. Lesbians, more than anybody else, are always like, let's be friends after we break up. And as much as we want to, I think we try really hard, but sometimes it's just not possible.
Oh, that's only because you had bad
experience.
And
then we end up, hey. And that's because, you know, we do want to preserve those friendships that we had before we began dating those people. And I think that when we can't, it hurts more because I think the best way that I can explain it is that in straight relationships, you have, you know, the person that you're dating, and then you've also got all your friends who are supportive no matter what, you know, whether you're with them or you break up with them. But in lesbian relationships, I think your best friend, in a lot of cases, is also your partner.
Yeah.
And so when you break up, it's especially heartbreaking because you're like, who do I call? I can't call the person I just broke up with.
Especially when you get in relationships and then you abandon all of your other friends. You know, because that... Stop flicking me off again.
I'm going to throw things at you.
It's a very big tendency among lesbians to seriously...
Really?
Totally go away from their friends because it's like... They finally found it. And so they want to spend all of their time with that person and preserve that so carefully that they neglect a lot of their other obligations and friendships and even, you know, relationships with their parents. I mean, it's very... I was like that when I first got into my relationship. I mean, I neglected a lot of people and things. But I think as that relationship grows, and, you know, as harshly as Colleen is staring at me right now, as her relationship has grown, she's become a lot more, a lot actually closer. Like, she was distant at first, and now she's getting back into the swing of things, it seems like it. So
when relationships begin, you do that whole, like, I'm going to go...
Puppy love.
And you just kind of...
Annoyingness.
The best two weeks of my life.
I call it the obnoxious couple stage. And it's where, like, no one can stand to be around you. Because you're just like, oh, my God, I love you. I love you, too. And then you're just like, stab, stab. And I don't actually stab people, but I sometimes...
She's lying.
Do y'all think that lesbian relationships develop faster than straight relationships or gay relationships?
Yes.
Women are more understanding.
Because we allow them to, really.
Yeah. Women are usually more in touch with their emotions, and we let our... easily, you know, just give our heart to someone. And go ahead.
Sean, what do you think about gay relationships? How do they develop differently than lesbian relationships?
You want my personal opinion?
Yes, I want your personal opinion. I'm not asking you to speak for the entire gay community. I'm asking
with me?
Your personal opinion.
Okay, you know what? What's really sad is I'm hearing all this, and it's like...
You're making him sad.
It makes me feel really bad, and I think about it, and I'm thinking about the gay youth, the male, you know? It's like what I've seen so far and what I've been through. It's like, I don't even believe in relationships anymore, because it's like nobody's really sure of themselves anymore. It's like with the youth, they're not sure. It's like what it's like, you know, they get together, they do this. That's what depends. You know, that's what decides how it's going to be after that. You know, mm-hmm. And it's like, wait. Never mind. It's just like, it's really hard because I lost faith in it. I got screwed over so many times to the point where I was like, oh, I guess it doesn't work my way or his way, our way together. I just get screwed over. So I started doing it myself. And now I just don't have faith in it. I can't be with somebody in the sense that it turned into me just saying when I meet somebody and think, oh, you know what? I can get to know this person. It can be great, you know? Finally, it just turned into, you know what? If you want to cheat on me, go ahead. Just don't tell me about it. And you really have, if you feel you really have to catch me in a good mood, we can talk about it, you know? Yeah. It's just like, I just don't have faith in it. It scares me because I feel like after all, you know, in general with the guys I've seen, even the older crowd, it's like how they are and stuff. It's like I see the old, you know, the older men, you know, who have relationships, and it makes me, it's like, why isn't it like that with the younger guys? You know, it's like they actually have something, you know?
Is that a stereotype that you're familiar with, that lesbians get into relationships really fast?
Well, it's like, I feel like y'all actually have a foundation. It's like, gay youth male, you know, I guess you could say. It's like a lot that I've seen, it's like they're not sure of themselves, and you girls really seem, this is something you build on your own, you know, in your own, as an individual, you know who you are, you know what you want and everything. Then when you combine that together, it's a good thing, you know? So it's just like...
Okay, I promised Travis that we were going to tell his joke. Beth says that I'm not funny, so I'm going to make her tell it.
I'm not going to tell
yes,
it,
you are.
Though.
Yes, you are.
Tell the sexy boys joke.
Sexy boys joke.
You're telling the joke.
I have all sorts of other gay jokes I could tell.
No, come on. We're telling this one because it's actually relevant. Fine, Pamela, you go ahead since Beth is stubborn.
I'm not stubborn, I just don't want to tell it.
Oh, okay.
Stubborn.
So, what do you call...
No, what do you...
No.
Tell it with wit, Colleen.
Okay, here we go.
All right, what do gay men bring on a second date?
Lead for it.
Go. What second date? Okay. And then what do lesbians bring on the second date? Come on now. They're U-Haul. Come on. It was funny.
It was slightly amusing. It's like the fifth time I've heard it tonight.
Practice.
You gotta rehearse the joke.
I do. I am not a funny person.
Travis, you should have told me that before.
The reason I wanted to bring that up is because I really do think that it represents the different stereotypes that are applied to both gay relationships and lesbian relationships. And so...
You know, actually, on this topic, I think that is very, like, the whole U-Haul thing, whatever. It's an extreme, but it is true, because I've dated a couple people. I've dated maybe 6 or 7 girls. And, well, okay, not really girls, but women. And I've dated 6 or 7 people. And, well, yeah, we know about your two. But anyway, when I do that, I've had... four of these females proposed to me.
Whoa.
Oh. That's a lot. Okay, I've only accepted one of them. And that's the one I'm in with now. But, okay. I mean, I think about it, and I think, okay, like this one girl that I knew, and she was actually the youngest girl that I've ever dated, and she was a year older than me. So I definitely don't date people near my age. But... she, we dated for about a week, and then she asked me to marry her. Oh, and then...
Wow. That's intense.
That's crazy. Wow.
And then I told her that I don't like... No, then I told her that I don't like facial piercings, and so we broke up. And I was like, wow, that was a really trivial relationship. It was horrible. The person, the ex that I had, through which I met my current partner, she and I we became friends, and then we were like, oh, I kind of like you. Oh, I kind of like you, too. And so we kind of got together. We never had a physical relationship. We were just pretty much, I guess, friends who said they were together. And she jokingly, called me her wife. Oh. And we would joke about, I mean, we talked about living together as friends and being roommates and having a pond with a bunch of fish because she didn't want kids and all those sort of things.
Fish are great for children.
Friends with fish for kids.
It's like, but I'd rather have koi.
But big enough to be a child.
No, but, you know, like when I got in the serious relationship that I'm in now, I mean, we talk about being married and getting married and having kids and, you know, things that we want and don't want in our lives and, you know, our professions and things like that. And so it's a little different. And I think with those first relationships that you have, especially ones with lesbians who are definitely, like, way over the top, want to be with somebody right then and there and think they're not going to put out unless you try to ask them to marry you. Because that's what I think a lot of lesbians, I think lesbians do some of that, though.
I think lesbians are highly focused on commitment because that's, you know, women are all about commitment, and so when women date other women, you know, I think, and even though that's kind of a stereotype, I think that there is some truth to it.
Yes.
Because we do focus so much on that, and we place so much emphasis on it.
But I think lesbians have a horrible tendency to say I love you on the first date.
Oh, yes.
Okay, you know what? No, I don't love you that. 30 seconds after I meet you. I love you
that would make
6 months
sad.
After I meet you and date you.
That would make
and, you
sad.
Know, I think some of my friends get in relationships who say I love you very quickly, and
that better not be directed at me.
I think it's a little
I think it was
it's
premature
a fast for me.
Ice
but at the same time, you know, when God, I feel like I can't say her name, you know, because I don't know if I can.
I want to be a lesbian.
Anyway. So, Cindy, when Cindy and I first started dating, I mean, we didn't say I love you. We would say, you know, we'd call each other babe and sweetheart, but I call everyone babe and sweetheart. But, you know,
it's very motherly.
Shut up. But I do those little things. But we didn't start saying I love you until, you know, 3 months after we started dating, which is actually a long time in lesbian terms.
Oh, yeah. Really?
I think.
Yeah.
It is.
Are you serious?
Seriously.
Okay. Wow.
Only because I think our relationships progress so quickly. Yeah. Like, you know, they say with gay men 3 months, oh my God, that's forever. You know, you're practically married. It's just jokingly they say that. But with lesbians, it's like, by 3 months,
you are.
If you're still in that relationship, then it's probably a pretty hardcore relationship.
Yeah. Like, I one of the girls that I work with, actually, she came out to me whenever she still works there, and she quit, like, a year ago, but she told me, she's like, oh, yeah, I started dating this new guy, this new girl, and I found out, like, 2 months later, she quit, and then a week after she quit, another girl that I work with who's friends with this person was like, oh, yeah, she's getting married.
What?
To the girl who she started dating 2.5 months ago. And I was like, are you kidding me? That's real quick.
Yeah. That is quick.
It was a little weird.
I don't see how people could be so
even
willing
for,
to.
Well, even for me going
so
that, I
dive into that.
Well, I think it's because you find somebody that you have, you know, built some trust with, and you automatically assume that that's how it's going to be.
And you're
going to. And that it's not going to change, and it's going to stay that relationship that way, because even I think that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's that, since it's like, you're not, this is just what I think of it, okay. Since it's different, hey, shut up.
No, it's time to put input.
Okay. But okay, since it's different,
you're being too quiet.
Since it's not like, you're not straight and you're a lesbian, so it's not necessarily a common thing that one, you want to find something quickly, and once you find it, it's like, okay, this has to be perfect. And that's how you think it is. So people are more, I think that's why they become so attached so quickly.
And start to build their life around that person.
Yeah, because it's like, it seems like I'm never going to find another lesbian in my life. So I found this perfect one.
Sometimes it feels that way.
You're just like, oh, well.
This is the perfect person for me.
That's a point there. Yeah. Do you think that because it's harder to find someone being a lesbian, considering that we are a smaller percentage of the population, do you think people are more willing to put up with relationships that aren't right for them?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, like that. Do you actually have some personal experiences?
I do.
Don't we all?
Last year, I met this girl. She was amazing. We had so much in common. She was beautiful, and she was with someone. And when she finally started that relationship, we were friends, and we got together. This person was bisexual.
Okay, first of all, how long did it take you to get together after you became friends?
5 months.
5 months. Okay, so that's actually quite a long time.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say, like, 1 week.
No, we knew each other for about 5 months. That's how long we knew each other. And I got together with this person who is bisexual and who had a boyfriend. I put up she wants to literally have her cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
Oh, that made me sad.
That made my stomach turn just a little.
Yeah.
That made my sexuality hurt.
That's why I no longer date bisexuals. I'm sorry. She ruined it for all the bisexual girls.
Don't let that one experience ruin it. Because you know, not all.
Some of us have faith in bisexuals.
I have faith in me.
I don't. I will never date a bisexual ever.
Okay, go ahead with your story.
No,
I said don't let that one thing just like mold your thing. Like if you went into the kitchen and you opened the refrigerator and you had some cheese and it was spoiled cheese, you're never gonna have cheese ever again because that one cheese was spoiled. You know, it's the same thing. It's just like, oh, I had a bad experience. You know, like if your ex was blonde, be like, oh, I had a bad experience with blonde. I'm never dating a blonde again. That's stupid. Yeah. You know, sorry to say, that's kind of stupid. You know, you can't just like lump all bisexuals together because of that one bad experience that you had with this one particular female.
That is true, but I mean, I noticed the majority of bisexuals I know that are my friends and everything, it's promiscuous. Promiscuity all around.
Because a lot of bisexuals feel that they can have that polyamorous lifestyle because, you know, that they're bisexual, but there is a percentage, of course, that doesn't feel that way. That, you know, I'm a one-person. You know, they'll stick and be committed to, you know, to you or, you know, to their boyfriend or whatever. And they won't, you know, sneak around or sleep around or feel like there's some, like, I need me a penis and just, like, run off and get one, you know, or, you know, vice versa.
Sorry, Beth can't say the word vagina.
Which one do you think is more common? Because in my experience, I've known a lot of bisexuals who are actually very upset at the idea when they're in a relationship, their partner always thinks that, you know, they're going to run off and date somebody of the opposite sex. And that's often a sense of paranoia.
I've had people flat out stop talking to me because I divulge to them that I am a bisexual. I'll be like, hey, you know, we're like talking, we're having a good time. And I just happen to like mention it. And they're like, yeah, we can't continue this conversation any further. And I'm just like, oh, what happened? And they're like, no, you're going to like, you know, go get a boyfriend and like cheat on me and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like this whole big, long, just like impossible story, you know. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm also going to fly to the moon and, you know, grow sunflowers. What are you talking about? It's like, I don't know. I think it's just this, I don't know. The masses, I don't know what person like went and like planted this seed, you know, this like, hi, you know, I don't know here.
It's
hard to explain because
I think it's because the majority of bisexuals are, you know, parading around. And I'm not to say that you do that, but because people majorly judge on what the majority of people are doing. So they're going to judge you that way because all they see is the promiscuity.
I've noticed, I think women are more likely to do this than men because a woman dating another bisexual female is more likely to be critical, whereas a guy dating a bisexual female would probably be like, oh, that's
not it. And women are more guarded with their hearts.
And I think that's because, you know, my example was there are a lot of women who, when they're experimenting, claim to be bisexual, when really they only say that because they think that their boyfriends or that other guys will find it attractive in them. Yes. And, you know, it's really hard, especially, like, whenever I meet someone older who says that they're bi, I always believe them right away. But when I meet younger bisexuals, sometimes it's harder for me to believe them, and it takes me a while, you know, because I kind of have this sense, like, somewhere in the back of my mind, like, okay, now prove it to me.
Yeah.
Or like, come back in 4 years and tell me the same thing, and then I'll believe you.
It's like, you know, I do that. You let me know that it's not a phase, and then I'll respect that.
I feel like such a hypocrite for when my parents were like, oh, it's just a phase. I'm like, no, I'm really gay. I'm really a lesbian dad. I promise I'm gay.
It's like that,
I know. I think
It's like you're disappointing him if you're not really gay. Yeah. So you are. It's really funny.
I realize that on some level I'm probably being prejudiced when I say that, you know, when they're younger, I have issues believing it. But it's just, it's so hard to just take that at face value sometimes. I think when they're like 18 and up, I'm just like, I believe you.
But also because people will use bisexuality as a transition into their, you know, lesbianism or gay male
Find out gay later.
It seems like now being bisexual is like a trend.
It's fashion.
Okay, like last year, I remember a whole bunch of stuff happened, and I guess I come to the realization that I was bisexual, and I was like, oh, okay. So I told my friend. It turns out that every one of my friends was bisexual, too, and I'm like, oh, wow, how am I supposed to believe this? And then everyone around me started becoming bisexual, and I'm like, what's happening?
They started hanging out
and
with me.
Yes. And it started confusing me quite much. And I was like, what's the deal? I mean, it's like, I know that there's a lot of guys, like you were saying, it's a lot easier for girls, but also I noticed that a lot of guys are becoming bisexual to where they want to kiss other boys or something, and they think it will attract girls. Yeah. And a lot of girls find that attractive, but it's like...
Especially in Europe.
Yeah, okay. And in other areas of the world.
I
think it's odd, though.
It is, but I think what they're seeing as physical attraction, as sexual attraction, I find him physically attractive. I think he's a very handsome guy, but I have absolutely no desire to sleep with him.
Are you pointing at Sean?
Yes.
Okay.
No. Oh, okay. I forgot your name. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I forgot your
name. Okay. I just started school, and like, what's surprising is like, probably the majority of the girls in most of my classes are bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure they are.
When
you're in high school, sweetie, of course.
No, it was true.
And what's weird is they all know each other. So is it like a trend by association
or what?
You know?
I think it's like once you know someone's bi, you're like, oh, me
it's
too.
Like, it's like domino rally.
Yeah.
And there happens to be one.
I would be surprised if half or more of those girls were actually bi. I think it's probably maybe like a fourth, maybe.
And the one.
But it seems like it's also helping it like be more accepted.
Yeah,
once
that's
first,
true.
Yeah, it's kind of helping.
But it's with that, it's just like it's still false. It's just like this. It's like, yeah, it's accepted, but it's not real. It's just like...
Yeah, it's like, it's only accepted just whenever you're going to kiss that other person.
It's
but like, once you have a relationship, that's just back away.
Right. Yeah, it's like, y'all are being...
Y'all are actually
serious.
In a relationship. Yeah, that's not cool.
It's like,
do you think that this notion affects how people perceive lesbian relationships? Because we talked about how a lot of people don't think that they're valid. And, you know, when there are a lot of girls who are experimenting and say that they're bisexual, do you think that that affects lesbians? Because that's saying, you know, well, any time that a girl has another relationship with... Or has a relationship with another girl, then it's just an experiment. Or
I think it's in our, like, at our current age and our youth it is. Mm-hmm. But I think, okay, I have these really two good friends who are lesbians, and they're quite a bit older than I am. One of them is 60, and her partner is 48. Mm-hmm. They're much older. They're very close. They're been together for, I think, 23 or maybe 32 years. I get the numbers switched a lot. And something to that effect. Anyway, they, you know, when somebody sees them together and knows that they're dating or, you know, married or whatever, they're like, okay, they're in a committed relationship, although it's more like a friendship. But when it's someone like our age, like, you know, my relationship, well, not, okay, let's not take
21
my...
21 and under.
Let's not take my relationship. Let's take, let's take Colleen. Okay, so like Colleen's relationship, you could see them as being just experimental, even though they're not. They're definitely gay.
Well, I think that comes from straight men view lesbianism as a disease and they're the cure.
Oh, like, you know how straight men say it, like, oh, that's hot. Well, the first thing I've heard out of these girls' mouths is, and it's like, it's come to the point where I don't care to hear it anymore that you're bi. It's like, they'll show me a picture of their girl, and they'll be like, isn't she hot? You know, whether they know I'm gay or bi or whatever.
Well, I mean, speaking of them being the cure, that's directly related to the whole sex is invalid unless there's a penis involved.
Exactly. It comes from men with their menness. Oh, I hate men. No, but, no, they just...
Oh, no.
No,
let's lesbians aren't men here.
I'm sorry, no. It's not lesbians that hate men. It's straight women.
It's
married women
it's
that
Greenlee.
Hate men.
It's Greenlee.
It's really. It's married women that hate men. I have no problem
I
with men.
I think men are cute.
You just said you hate men, funny. And then you said you
you're contradicting yourself.
They're
so
cute.
I'm going to catch you on that.
It was a joke.
Okay.
No, that was real.
Wait, which
very
one?
True.
That I hate men. I don't hate men. I have no problem with men.
Okay.
But, I mean, I just don't want one. No, but I mean...
I love men.
Meanie. Right? No, but it comes from, you know, men being the big, dominant, supreme person. It's like, oh, just go have sex with a man and they'll cure all that lesbianness right out of you. Like, and then there's the whole, oh, were you raped by a man when you were younger? And that's what made you turn to women for comfort.
Gotta
and
find your root.
So the yeah. whole, I'm afraid of the penis, yeah. therefore I am gay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Argument. Yeah, mm-hmm. no. Mm-hmm.
You have a question?
Jenny,
yeah, I actually
you don't need to raise your hand. It's not fun.
Oh,
you told her too earlier.
Jenny.
Go for it.
Back in 10th, 9th grade, I had a friend who was gay that I came out to. So then when we were hanging out at class, when finally I was like, hey, do you want to go see a movie? Someone was like, oh, so you're going to clear the gay right out of him. Way to go. I'm like, I'm gay too.
Maybe you crazy. Cancel each other out.
Oh.
Y'all just neutral. Straight.
No, actually, what's really funny about that, and I know that Sean will laugh at this, is, I have this really good friend who we've mentioned earlier, a guy named Travis. I talked to him about this earlier today. He and I are really pretty good friends, and sometimes we'll be sitting next to each other on a bench or something, and a lot of people, even when we're like at Hatch, a gay place, they will come up just be like, oh, are y'all dating? And I'm like, no, we're not dating. But everyone keeps saying we would be a cute couple, and I told Travis about this tonight, and he's like, why? And I was like, I don't know, but I think we would be the couple everybody hated. And he thinks that's because everyone hates both of us. No, but I think that a lot of people, actually one person I talked to was talking about if me and him dated, it would be canceling our gays out because we would be straight then. And he'd be like, neither of you would be gay, and you'd both be straight, and you would be great. It's like, oh, that's sad.
It's crazy.
See, I just hate you.
Hatch, like, oh, that's wrong.
I love
that. Even when I was in Hatch, I think that. People thought I was dating John for a while. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody asked me if we were dating. I was like, you've known me for over a year. You know I'm gay. Why would you ask me that?
Who's John?
Because you never know with you, Colleen, honestly.
But no.
Why would they... Uh-uh. I love how she didn't get that until, a minute
that's
later.
That's because I was ignoring you, like usual.
Anyway.
Oh, no, I love Pamela.
Not right. We love you.
Okay. When we're talking about lesbian relationships, how do you think they're different from straight relationships? Like, one of the things we want to talk about was age differences and whether or not you think they're more likely.
Yeah.
Woo! Yes, Pamela has a lot to say.
No, actually, I date people who are quite a bit older than I am.
Same here.
Well, wow. I really don't want to announce this because it's a really bad jail case if I ever got caught. But I've dated people who are definitely more than twice my age at times. Mm-hmm. And I've dated people, you know, when I was a lot younger, who a lot of people would view it as taking advantage of me. But see, when I make the move, it's a little different. Because, I would make a move on some older women, and they would just be like, oh, okay. And they would follow through. But they wouldn't, say no, even though socially they're supposed to. They'd be like, they wouldn't, I don't know. Like, there was this one woman who, I've always been attracted to older women, okay? I always have. And I didn't really seek her out, but we became really close. And, you know, we would occasionally kiss, but not like a, you know, hard, you know, heavy set French, you know, in deep throat kiss.
La, 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 la.
But
let's not say deep throat on the air.
That upsets me.
But we would kiss occasionally, and I would give her massages, and she would be naked. And things like that. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Does that classify as sex?
No, it doesn't. But, you know, things like, it was with an older woman, and we didn't consider it a relationship. We considered it a friendship that had
benefits.
Benefits. But at the same time, a lot of, like even my friends earlier that I mentioned, one's 16, one's 48, that's a pretty big age difference. If you think about it, it's, I mean, I don't know. When they're older, it's not, but, okay, my relationship now, I'm young and the person I'm dating isn't. And she's...
I think you can say we don't know her last name, so...
Okay, well, she doesn't even live in the state at the moment. So, okay, yeah, okay. So, I'm 17 and she's in her 30s. So, there you go. That's an example of someone, an older and younger relationship. Well, see, it took me a long time. Well, in youth people, it takes them a long time to be able to be honest with their parents about it, and that was my problem. Is I felt like I couldn't tell my parents. Well, my mom knows, my dad still doesn't exactly know. But things like that, I don't know. I do think that big age differences in lesbian relationships is very prominent.
I personally felt that, I think with you were more sure of yourself, and older women, I've noticed this because I've dated women 40, 45, I won't go above 50, but, my age, and I think, well, with older women, they are more sure of themselves, and they're not looking to impress anybody like these younger girls are, and so there's a sense of security with, you know, an older person.
Well, actually, what happened, sorry, go ahead.
No.
Okay, no, don't do that. Okay.
No.
Well, he's going to talk.
Okay. No, it's not that. It's like, I don't know, like, with the age thing, it's like, It honestly, it doesn't really matter to me, but I do like to build a relationship with someone who has been through, who, like, has gone, like the same walk of life as me, like, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes that will come from, like, an older person, you know, because I've had, like, you know, all sorts of fun experiences in my lifetime that people my age haven't gone through. And, you know, you can find that connection with someone who is a lot older.
Yeah.
Okay, I had a question for y'all. Do you think society is more accepting of these age differences in lesbian relationships than in straight or gay relationships?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, why? Because, okay, if you take a 17-year-old girl and a 35-year-old guy, and they're having sex, they're going to be thrown in jail.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you take me and my partner, you're going to have somebody who, they just really don't care very much. They're like, oh, whatever, y'all are doing whatever you know how y'all are doing, and we can't see it, and that's cool.
Well, what about gay relationships, though?
I think that's an entirely different case.
Yeah.
I think if an older man tries to date a younger man, he's often perceived as like some sort of chicken hawk. Or
pervert.
Well, a pedophile, really. Pretty much. And so, but, you know, when an older woman dates a younger woman,
well, most people just don't judge that.
She's not a pedophile unless you joke and call me a pedophile.
I agree.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, so. The thing is that, I think that the gay male relationships with the age difference, if a younger man seeks out an older man, I don't think it's perceived as bad, but I think when an older man seeks out a younger man, it is because of people like Gacy, the serial killer, and all of them.
But when you see
two men walking together on the street, you don't know who began the relationship, who pursued whom, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
so how do you think people would react if you saw a lesbian couple on the street versus if you saw a gay couple?
Well, I think it's because people see men as more aggressive. When you think an older man, you think, you know, he must have attacked his poor child. I mean, men are more aggressive and men are
more carnal.
Yeah, and being more, you know, I want this, I see this, I'm going to go and get it. And but some women are like that, but I guess his women are known to be more soft and feminine. You think, oh, that sweet little woman couldn't have gone and got with that baby. Yeah.
No, well, they think it's like a mother and daughter thing.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't think
like my mentor.
Whatever it's like with guys, I think it's because usually the more common
pedophile would be a male and not a female.
Yeah. Normally, yes.
And unfortunately, we have to end on that note and wrap it up. Let's see, if you ending need more pedophilia. Information about that, nice. You can reach us at the youth hotline, which is 713-529-3590, or go to our website at www.hatchyouth.org. There should be information on prom and pride up there as well pretty soon. Also, if you wanted to reach our Yahoo group or MySpace, you can go to Yahoo group Hatch_Houston, or the MySpace group, which is under Hatch Youth. If you need just general information, the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard hotline is a good number to call, and that's 713-529-3211. All right, thanks for listening.
Bye.
We love you.
Bye.
Toodles.
Rainbow power.
No shout-out? Oh, okay. This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, and Binet is coming up. Put a little music in the ear while we're transitioning. Let's go with a little bit of lesbian music, since we've had them in. And actually, a artist who performed at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Melissa Etheridge, came in as a substitute, so... cute people out there, bring me some water.
Tonight I feel so weak, but all in love is fair. I turn in the cheek and I feel the slap and the sting of the foul night air. And I know you're only human, and I haven't got talking room. But tonight, while I'm making excuses, some other woman is making love to you. Somebody bring me some water. Can't you see I'm burning? Will this night be through? Wanna hear the breaking glass? I wanna feel the steel of the red hot truth, and I'd do anything to get it out of my mind. I need some insanity of that temporary kind. Tell me, how will I ever be the same when I know that that woman is whispering? Somebody bring me some water.
If you think HIV/AIDS is no longer a problem, think again. In Houston, every 8 hours, someone becomes infected with HIV. 1 in 90 Houstonians is HIV positive. There's still no cure, but you can protect yourself and others by getting tested and learning more about this deadly disease. You can help. Join AIDS Foundation Houston in the fight against HIV/AIDS on Sunday, March 12th for the 17th annual AIDS Walk Houston. With your participation, we can give thousands of men, women, and children a reason for hope. For more information about AIDS Walk Houston, call 713-403-WALK or log on to www.AIDSWalkHouston.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
And this year for the AIDS Walk, we have a special Grand Marshal for the event, Anthony Rapp, best known as from the cast of Rent, both the movie and the original Broadway play, musical. It's time now for Binet.
Ah, yes. And we're here. Springtime's coming upon us, and so I thought tonight I'd do a show about the Sacred Sex Temple. This is a time for fertility rites and for love and for just kind of getting into it all.
Yeah.
And as many of the listeners know, I do run a sex temple for the pagan community and for many different alternative communities. And tonight I thought I'd talk a little bit about it. I brought some readings and some thoughts and some things to kind of open people's minds to a whole different sense of sexuality. Not one of romantic love, but one of opening up oneself. Outside the temple, I keep information for people to read. And I don't usually like to read things on the air, but tonight I'd like to just kind of open the show with a welcome.
He's created a book here. He's got everything from A to Z and in between all laid out for the edification of whoever wants to be educated. And it's really wonderful, so.
Yes. I may even have you read some from it.
Sure.
Welcome to the Sacred Sex Temple. Here you will find information about human sexuality and sacred sex. You're about to enter into a sacred space. Here you will find a sex-positive environment that is safe and protected. Each of us has grown up in a sex-negative culture. For many, we carry pain and wounds from living in a society that devalues human sexuality and sexual expression. Furthermore, we are bombarded with messages that erode our self-esteem and body image. And we're kind of bombarded with a lot of advertising that says, here's sex, and then it takes it away from you.
Mm-hmm.
Here's sex, and takes it away from you. We live in a social system that labels, categorizes, and stigmatizes sex, gender, body image, gender identity, and sexual orientation. For me, sacred sex is about healing our wounds from living in a sex-negative culture, reclaiming our sexuality, celebrating our sexual expression with one another, dropping labels and preconceived notions which block us from exploring what feels good sexually, redefining beauty as having spiritual, physical, and psychic components, and getting back in touch with our bodies as being natural. As you enter, visualize placing these negative attitudes, labels, and values into a safe place by the entrance. Allow your inner child to come out and play while you are here. Come explore, try new activities that feel safe for you, and enjoy a realm where imagination and creativity are encouraged. Allow your inner spirit to guide you. We do not have a direct conscious connection with the material world. We each create the world from our perceptions. When we create the world, what we perceive is influenced by our attitudes, values, and emotions. We have a lot of power and control over our environment. By choosing to bring a positive energy into a space, we can free ourselves to experience life with deeper meaning. Often when we define something, we build a wall and shut ourselves out by giving the definition negative connotations. Myth and taboo are especially restrictive. By questioning, challenging, and breaking myths and taboos, we open ourselves to see the world in new ways. If the goddess had meant for human beings to have sex, she would have given us genitals.
Hmm. Beautiful.
And I know you just got brief glances at the book, but, you know, the sacred sex temple really is this space of being able to put everything we've learned and been socialized that we're supposed to be aside.
Yeah.
And to just follow our hearts and our spirits.
Well, one of the things that I found interesting in the book as I was glancing over it was, you know, a certain amount of people out there really kind of don't have any idea of how to actually proceed in terms of actually doing things. And I thought it was really interesting that you had different healing rituals and sexual rituals. Well, they're all sexual rituals, but yeah, but they're for different purposes and different explorations. And it's wonderful that you just, you know, kind of take somebody, more or less, on the page, take somebody by the hand and lead them gently through something that could be very helpful for them.
And actually, at the actual temple,
and you know, and all of this is from experience.
Yeah, at the actual temple, what we do is have workshops during the day,
mm-hmm,
and then we open the temple at night for people to come and play and
yeah,
explore.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of educational. Both, it's kind of learning up here in the head during the day, and then putting what you learn into use.
Well, I found it interesting you were saying that wasn't romantic sex.
Not necessarily.
I'm curious as to.
It's a little bit deeper connection.
Yeah.
It's a spiritual sexuality.
Yeah.
It's where two people can, whether they're committed or
mm-hmm,
in love or not in love,
mm-hmm,
it's where you can really kind of drop some of this.
Right.
What we're supposed to do and what we're supposed to be, drop that down and just let the spiritual sexuality
right,
come out.
Mm-hmm.
And some people come in and play with their partner, but a lot of people come in and just play with someone they just met there that night.
Sure, sure. Well,
so it's very open to...
Yeah, I know in my own experience, I, you know... and sometimes people who really mostly are just want to look for a partner.
Yeah,
they really discount the whole idea of how incredibly perfect and intimate sex can be with a stranger.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Well, there's also this myth in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the Prince Charming myth.
Right,
and it's like, you know, it's, so many people wait for Prince Charming or Princess Charming
mm-hmm,
to come into their lives. And once that magical person comes in, their life is going to transform into happiness and bliss here and ever after. And it's like, it just doesn't work that way.
No, whatever you choose, it's going to be work at some point.
Yeah.
You know.
Relationships take work. And
mm-hmm,
and I base a lot of the sacred sex temple on the ancient temples.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, in our culture, we've moved away from real sex education.
Right.
In the ancient days, you could go to a sex temple as a youth
mm-hmm,
and be taught the ways of lovemaking by someone older
mm-hmm,
and have sex with them.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
be shown every, you know, how, not just the physical mechanics.
Well, and also in not in a cold,
right,
calculating way, but in a very kind, friendly way. I mean, in the sense of, if someone doesn't know anything sexually and they want to proceed and they want to go ahead and have sex, what could be kinder
Oh, yeah.
And then someone with experience in a really loving way showing them how to do stuff.
Yeah. You know? And it's more than just learning how the mechanics
exactly.
Affects.
Yes, yes.
In the ancient temples, they taught you exercises mm-hmm. that can help develop your sexual system. Mm. They taught you breathing techniques that help enhance sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing techniques you can use during your lovemaking.
Sure.
That will help you really experience love in a deeper sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also, I've always, in my own experience, found that there was a whole energetic component to sex, too, and learning how to play. Even though you can't see them, taste them, you can feel them. But you can't exactly touch them, but that you can really sort of get somebody's lights going,
yeah.
You know, and get the energy playing. And I know you do a lot of that kind of stuff, too.
Oh, yes. In fact, one of the things I'm doing this spring, and I did it last spring for the first time, I wrote a ritual, and I call it the Stag Hunt.
Mm.
And it's really this amazing ritual. Basically, you come to the temple for the ritual, and we have people come early that want to actively participate in the ritual, mm-hmm. and they can choose to be either a stag or a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And as a stag, you become like an animal,
mm-hmm.
like a stag.
Mm-hmm.
You get into the male energy,
mm-hmm.
and kind of get into the bestial mm-hmm. energy.
Primal.
Yeah. And I have the stags quit talking. They can make animal sounds. They can sniff. They can roam about. They learn their territory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I send them out into the area, the wild wilderness around us,
mm-hmm.
to learn their kind of roaming area.
Mm-hmm.
And I also explain that stags are kind of herd animals. They stick together in groups.
Mm.
And so I send them out to kind of learn their area and to get into that stag mindset. And then the hunters or huntresses, I have come and prepare themselves for the hunt. And so they paint their bodies. And the whole ritual is done either in the nude or in erotic wear.
Mm-hmm.
The stags can wear animal skins. The hunters and huntresses can wear very erotic outfits, hopefully very skimpy. and usually they do. And then they paint their bodies for the hunt with markings.
They must be very beautiful.
And it gets into this primitive mindset, mm-hmm. once again, getting back in touch with our roots, with our ancestry. And then I bring everybody back together to start the ritual. And we go over a few ground rules. We have a certain area that people can't go out of.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some safety precautions put into place. So I kind of go over all that. And then we send the stags out back out to the wild.
Mm.
And as the stags are kind of figuring out where they want to go and hide or do whatever they're going to do, graze. Then the hunters do a hunting dance around the fire and kind of build that hunting energy.
Mm.
And then after a little while, when everything feels ready and the energy's right, we send the hunters out to capture the stags. And once they capture a stag, they bring it back to the temple.
Mm.
And then for the stag to be re-released back to the wild, they have to perform sexual favors for their huntress.
I see.
And that's open to negotiation between hunter and stag. Mm-hmm. It can include an erotic massage to oral sex to whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just whatever the two people are. Sometimes there could be two hunters
some of the stags sort of like let themselves get caught occasionally.
That could very well be. I kind of leave it to the ritual and the mindset to guide mm-hmm. everyone. And it's a very powerful ritual.
Sure.
The people that have partaken in it said, well, especially the stags, they said, you know, I really my senses change during this ritual. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I could, because no flashlights are allowed. It takes place around midnight, and it's under full moonlight, but it's in the woods.
Well, that whole stag thing is very powerful.
Yeah,
I mean,
it comes from the archetypal memories.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. It just arises spontaneously. Yeah. Sometimes I remember one time when I was in Washington, D.C. for a month, and I was having an affair while I was there with this guy, and we were walking through the National Cathedral to visit somebody else that I was also having an affair with. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me about this dream that, you know, where there was this horned god and the stag that was in the dream. And he was saying, well, and it's obviously you. So, I mean, it really is just a natural part of our psyche. It's embedded in there. And
I think we also have what's called genetic memory.
Exactly.
And so the stag and the hunter is very much within us. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's buried very deep and comes out in not so good ways in modern society.
Yeah.
But when you can bring it out in its full manifestation in a healthy way, it can become very powerful.
Right.
And especially when you add in a little bit of sexuality to
it. Well, when you do it the modern way, you end up with a vice president shooting his buddy, his camping buddy.
Yeah. But, you know, the temple is part of, well, we'll be running it at ESA, or Spirit Alliance. And if people want more information about the pagan festival coming up, go to earthspiritalliance.org. They have information about the spring ritual, the Maiden Awakens. And we'll be running temple out there and doing a stag hunt.
I didn't even know about that organization. I'll have to look it up myself. Yeah.
It's on the web. And it's very GLBT friendly. Well, I'm bisexual and I run the temple.
Well, yeah.
In the adult area. And we get the temple space is really awesome.
Well, you're legendary. You're legendary in the magical those kind of circles. I mean, in terms of what you bring to the gatherings and the people you've helped liberate through the years. I mean, you are legendary at this point.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. But
you are. Yeah. There's no doubt.
But
you're listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM, and Galveston 89.5 FM.
Oh, my.
gotta let them know what's going on.
Well, that's a new technique. But anyway, I'd like to, now that we've had a short break, I'd like to do a poem I wrote long ago. And this kind of gets into the primal. It was when I was first kind of really getting deeply in touch with my own bisexuality. Mm-hmm. And the first draft I wrote when I was a teenager, and then I rewrote it when I was in college. Mm. And this is the rewritten version. It's called Song of the Moon Boy. The campfire within the forest flames away the hazy darkness. Night magic envelops. A boy stands erect. A woman steps from the trees. The wind brings cool movement. I yearn to see moonlight soaring to the silvery moon lining. I call the primal song. Awaken, moon boy. Lady of silver magic, dancing with moonlight. Through the mist, to me near the flame, the secret entrance opens, bodies shimmer, the clouds depart, revealing. Fire licks and swirls, I open myself, the rhythm begins. A kiss, the moon shines her blessing, my silvery shaft of light merges with semi-darkness, we thrust the silver shafts, entwined. Bathe this warm fluid of silver moonlight. We see beyond the whispering stars. When I reach, you're both here within. Discover.
Beautiful. I beg to differ. That is very romantic. Extremely romantic. I mean, it's
it
not
could
not
be
the
interpreted
not
that
not
way.
That you know, not the I own you type of romantic, but romantic in the sense of like just full of love.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that you can have something full of love. When I say romance, I'm talking about this kind of
mythology of
boy meets girl, falls in love, and live the rest of their lives.
And it is good to be clear about that. But you know, I don't know, just...
Now, there can be romance.
Something that only happens once can be as romantic as anything that's ever happened on the planet.
And I'm not saying romance is bad.
No, exactly.
But I think sometimes
but it's just
we
when
get
it,
blinded.
Well, it's when it leads to expectations.
Yes.
When it you owe me this, you owe me that.
Exactly.
Because I'm doing this and I'm doing that.
Mm-hmm. But anyway... Part of Temple for me is about bringing people together and connecting.
Absolutely.
And performing rites and rituals and getting back in tune with our bodies, our sexual selves.
That's the thing.
And becoming creative and sexually expressive again. You know, too often we get into this kind of rut of what we've been taught and what we've been told we should be and what we shouldn't be, and we can't play with sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got to be this deep thing that's, you know, and so with our partners, a lot of times we get stuck where we can't become expressive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go through the same motions, the same routines, the same dance.
Right, right.
Not that it always happens that way, but a big part of what Temple is about for me is to open the door and say, you know, you don't have to be stuck there. You can, you can. I mean, I remember one night at Temple, we decided to do Love with Nature. And so we were climbing trees, and it was kind of more into a masturbation thing, and making love with nature, and feeling the wind on our bodies, and the texture of the trees against our naked bodies, and just kind of getting into making love with nature and the whole elements.
Well, you know,
and it was very powerful.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of repetition that happens in sex, but in the sense, but like one of my lovers, I mean, we had sort of discovered by exploring each other a formula, you know, several formulas, several different formulas, so it wasn't always exactly the same, but that really unlocked the gates. You know, where it just, I mean, I would have visions when, during orgasm.
Oh yeah.
You know, for my art and everything. I mean, and you know, just a certain amount of repetition is when you find the formula that works through exploration.
And I think that I'm not, once again, I'm not saying that it's bad to have that. But Temple goes one step further and says, let's see what else
just
is out
let it
there.
All
let's go.
Go
a little
in
further.
In terms of the Temple context. I see.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's saying, let's open the door.
And I'm just being a little bit
more
devil's advocate here, too, just
crack.
To kind of, you know, could it get you talk more. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So,
I'm glad you do.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically, Temple is really about taking a whole new look. Oh, okay. Temple is even a step beyond just a partnership type love.
Absolutely.
And it's being able to share. You can come to Temple with your partner and just be with your partner the whole time. But you're also with a whole group of people into the same mindset. And everybody's making love together as a group. Not necessarily orgy style, everybody on everybody.
Sure. Right.
Sometimes it's one couple over in one corner, and but it's a group experience, a group dynamic occurs.
Absolutely. You're in in a larger energy field.
All of a sudden, it's taking sex out of the bedroom out of the closet, and out of the secrecy.
Oh, yeah.
and bringing it out to full light and sharing it as a group experience. And that can be very powerful.
No doubt.
But it's also about exploring new territory. And I'd like you to read this poem for us.
Sure.
This is something that kind of opened my eyes, and so I wrote a poem about it that a lover did with me.
Okay, so this is...
And it kind of helped open the door to some of the concepts I brought into Temple.
Okay.
It kind of... One of the things I encourage is a sense of play.
Yes.
And I think that's captured in this poem.
Okay, it's called Linen, like the bedsheet linen. Drink more giggle water, her smile gleamed, a mischievous whimper. She made ready her playful diversion as I sparked the tinder in the hearth. I stood warming by the fire, a blindfold slipped across my face, shoes and socks, her fingers loosed, shirt and pants whispered to the floor. She led me to the place prepared. Soft linens lined the nest. I sat alone. A feather danced upon my elbow. A pine cone rolled inside my thigh. A silken scarf drew swirling goosebumps from nipple to toe. Chilled champagne pooled in my belly button. A diving tongue lapped me warm. A necklace clinked and tangled my pubic hair. A kiss and I gulped more wine. A laugh rolled metal balls down my spine. Warm custard puddled my bottom cheeks. Icy sludgy wine melted my cock. A slurping kiss. She sat on my lap. The blindfold pulled away. Oh, that's beautiful. I love that last line.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's sort of like an eye-opening experience, literally.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the blindfold of the limitations just gone.
And so that's part of what Temple's about, is to kind of remove that blindfold, to remove some of the social conditioning, because we have so much of that that clutters us in sexuality.
It's hard for me to remember, but I did one time, once upon a time, too.
and we're all in different stages in our path.
Sure.
And some are more in tune with sexual freedom than others.
And I can remember when as I passed through different thresholds and through different levels of exploration, how... It was really hard and scary to step through and explore something. And just the mention of certain things would sort of like kind of freak me out.
Oh, yeah.
And then once I had explored and once I had really gotten to know myself, it was just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And still is.
Oh, yes. Well, one of the things that kind of inspired me long ago... I read, you know, as a philosophy major in my undergrad, and I started reading about some of the ancient sacred sex temples. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, that's so missing in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if you're on a business trip or you're away from your loved one and being able to go down to the neighborhood sex temple and have a wonderful night of love and or just an erotic massage or maybe you're young and coming of age and you go down to the sex temple for a coming of age ritual.
Right, and it wasn't a situation where they were particularly earning their keep. It was just part of a community of priests and priestesses who were supported by the community and well taken care of and well fed and you know, lived comfortably. I mean, so it wasn't the commercial thing so much.
Oh, it wasn't commercial at all.
Yeah.
I mean, people...
No, but in the sense of, you know, a businessman on a trip or something.
Yeah.
You know?
But
the demeaning, sometimes demeaning situations that prostitutes have to get into.
Well,
you know,
the ancient temple wasn't about prostitution
at
all.
Exactly.
It was about performing a sacred service.
Exactly.
And sexuality was considered sacred in the ancient temples. It wasn't...
Separated. Yeah, yeah.
It was all about being in tune with our bodies and with one another.
You know,
and being able to express...
Well, and that's one of the things
sexuality.
That I think is your the value of the work that you do.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, to I'm sure a lot of listeners and a lot of people who first hear you talking about this or come across these ideas, you know, even people who think of themselves as liberated, you know, would think, well, that would be impossible in today's society. There's no way. Because while there's a lot of hedonism... it seems sort of frantic. A lot of it seems sort of frantic and not really...
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's hard to put into words. Yeah. But I think part of that comes from this powerful sense of myth and taboo.
Mm-hmm.
There is one thing I'd like to pull out, and then I think we'll go to a music break while we ponder this. I need to find it a second. Let's see, where did I... Oh, I know where it is.
Because I think a lot of your rituals also have to do with really honoring yourself and honoring your partner or partners.
Oh, yes.
You know,
definitely.
And maybe that's what I think is missing sometimes out there in the sort of Paris Hilton kind of frenzied world, love world.
But I think also, here it is, also we don't even notice sometimes when taboo is working in our lives.
Right.
Taboo is a form of psychosocial control more potent than even the most rigid moral code. A taboo is a prohibition collectively shared by society with a force so strong that it is rarely questioned or even discussed. It just is. And that comes from Anal Pleasure and Health, A Guide for Men and Women by Jack Moran.
And that's very much in Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very much, I mean, talk about taboos that you destroy life, quality.
And a myth is a collective belief or set of beliefs that are based on the ideology of a group rather than an analysis of facts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just based on what a group kind of has brought about through history and through kind
of
shared
sort
belief.
Of like the old myth, and one that's still in play is, you know, that if you're gay, you're going to be lead a miserable, terrible life, or if you're bisexual, it's all just going to be confusion and craziness. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a myth.
And you know, we have many. Many taboos. I mean, I love this definition I found in Anal Pleasure and Anal Health, because, you know, well, one of the things in that book, they give a lot of exercises on how to break taboos, especially concerning the anus, because in our society, anything anal tends to have a lot of taboo about it. It's dirty. It's unclean.
Well, I remember when I was first exploring that too. I mean, the first time I, you know, had that done, it was like really easy. And then all of a sudden later, it was like I can't relax.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what is that all about? And it was all these issues I had, all these taboos that I didn't even know were there. And also all the people that say, well, I just can't relax. Well, there are exercises. You can.
And it just takes, part of it does take breaking the taboos.
Yeah.
For yourself. It's. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done many, many exercises in this area, and I do highly recommend the book, Anal Sex and Anal Pleasure. Anal Pleasure and Anal Health.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a wonderful book on how to break taboos. And on that, why don't we go to a music break, and then we'll be back with some more about the sex temple.
Earth was still flat, clouds made of fire, the mountains stretched up to the sky, sometimes higher. Folks roamed the earth like big rolling cakes. They had two sets of arms, they had two sets of legs, they had two faces peering out of one giant head, so they could watch all around them as they talked while they read. And they never knew nothing of love. It was before the origin of love. And there was three sexes then, one that looked like two men glued up back to back. They called the children of the sun, and similar in shape and girth was the children of the earth. They looked like two girls rolled up in one, and the children of the moon was like a fox stuck on a spoon. They were fox and water, fox daughter, fox son. Now the gods grew quite scared of our strength and defiance, and Thor said, I'm gonna kill them all with my hammer, like I killed the giants. But Zeus said, no, you better let me use my lightning like scissors, like I cut the legs off the whales, dinosaurs into lizards. And then he grabbed up some bolts, he let out a laugh, said I'll split them right down the middle, gonna cut them right up in half. Hear the storm clouds gathered above, it's a great bull's fire. And then fire. Just split in two. You was looking at me, I was looking at you. You had a way so familiar I could not recognize, 'cause you had blood on your face, I had blood in my eyes. But I could swear by your expression that the pain down in your soul was the same, the one down in mine. Oh, that's the pain that kept the strain.
is what? One thing I love about Melissa Etheridge is that, like, she definitely makes sure that rock and roll stays in gay culture. I mean, it's part of gay culture. Because it gets lost sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, welcome back to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. This is the bisexual segment, and we're talking about the Sacred Sex Temple. One of the components of the Sacred Sex Temple that we run is training for sacred whores.
Ah, that sounds like fun.
And basically, the sacred whores, the priests and priestesses that help run the temple, are there to help facilitate a sex-positive environment for people.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I've put together quite a training program.
Wonderful.
It goes into a lot of levels. Not everybody's cut out for this.
Sure.
And a lot of people think, oh, I just want to get my rocks off. I'll become a sacred whore. Well, it's best just to come to temple for that.
Yeah.
Because it's really...
Well, I mean, it seems like part of, I mean, what you seem to be describing is people who make sure that everyone's doing all right.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's kind of monitoring the environment. Mm-hmm. It's also learning about sexuality.
I know in meditation retreats, they talk about maintaining the container.
Yeah.
That you make sure that there's a safe container for the mm-hmm. people who are working with mind and body.
Right.
And that, you know, that you, that integrity of the container and making sure everyone's safe within it.
Yeah. And it's also we're there to help answer questions.
Exactly,
and teach.
Yeah.
And educate. Part of what big component of the Sacred Sex Temple is educational.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, we do workshops during the day, and we go over a lot of information. They're interactive workshops. They mm-hmm. aren't people come and sit and listen while we tell you.
Mm-hmm.
It's actual hands-on interactive workshops
mm-hmm.
where we have people do exercises and go through intimacy building and trust building and getting back in tune with your sexual body type thing.
Hmm.
And so a big part of it is learning some of the techniques.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, a little more detail on that.
Yeah. Some of the things I've incorporated come from places like Body Electric.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it comes from some ancient practices. The Kundalini, raising the Kundalini.
Yeah.
Part of it comes from the Kama Sutra. And
wonderful.
Part of it comes from tantric sex.
Mm-hmm.
So it's learning more than just stick it in, get it off.
Mm-hmm.
It's learning how to breathe, how to develop your muscles, how mm-hmm. to really, and then learning some of the spiritual components, learning how to communicate both verbally and non-verbally in a sexual way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about building a sexual communication
right.
between people. And learning how to say no in a positive way. You know, a lot of times
right.
we say no and it's taken as rejection. You know,
right.
no, get back, you filthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we build in a lot of honor and respect.
Right.
And so part of the job of the priests and priestesses is to help facilitate that kind of attitude and environment. And we do it through learning ourselves, and then modeling that behavior.
Right.
And also, you know, people come to a sex temple, they're kind of scared. What's this about?
Well, that's
you know?
What I was gonna. That's what I was.
And so, part of the job of the priests mm-hmm. and priestesses is to, you know, I do this all the time. I'll see someone kind of hanging over to the sidelines, just kind of watching, and I can tell they really want to get into this, but mm-hmm. they're, you know, it's a little scary, and mm-hmm. they're not sure how to interact with it all. So I'll walk up to them and I'll say, "Hi. How do you like the temple? Let me show you around." And then I'll get to talking to him a little bit, and I'll say, well, you know, I noticed that you're really kind of getting into all this. Is there anybody that you find attractive here?
Yeah.
And they'll say, well, yeah, that person over there kind of caught my eye. And I said, well, would you like to meet them? And I help facilitate the process. And so I'll take them and introduce
hostess
them.
Hostess with the mostest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's about building bridges and connections.
That's wonderful.
And giving people, you know, I don't shove it down anybody's throat.
No.
Or
no.
I don't go, hey, come here, let's get you two together, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but very much like this is normal.
Yeah. And then if someone... If I take them and the person isn't reciprocated,
sure.
Then I say, well, who else are you interested in?
Right.
You know, and let it go beyond. But the other side is also building this concept of having honor and respect for one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is a high honor to be appreciated as a sexual being.
You know, I actually think that that's one thing that I've noticed. It seems like in the 70s, and, you know, the glorious 70s, you don't want to,
yeah,
like, you know, monumentalize them too much. But it seemed like that people in those times knew how to be admired.
Yeah.
And that it would charge you up, and then you would sort of shine and give that back.
Yeah.
Whereas it seems like people now, I mean, some of the people now are, they only want to be admired by certain people.
Yeah.
They're sort of like, what are you looking at? Not particularly that I get that, but I mean, but I've noticed that a lot of people seem to be stingy about letting people admire them, which sounds sort of odd that you could be stingy with that, but you know, and
or it just if makes you are admired, or it's like when I was young and I'd finally get the nerve up to ask a boy out or a girl out.
But that's what I'm saying, though, is when somebody admires you to give the radiance back, you sort of shine the light on them then. You reflect the light back so that they shine, too.
Yeah. But one of the things I realized was that, you know, I'd finally get this nerve up to ask them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, no, get back, get away.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
And it was like, oh, it was so crushing, you know.
Well, you know.
And one of the things we facilitate in Temple is a different way of saying no. It's
and
a sex positive
way. And I've always thought that there was no accounting for taste.
Yeah.
One of the things I learned early on in my sex career was never take rejection personally, because...
Well, we go a step beyond that.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, no, get back.
Yeah.
What we, one of the things we work on in the workshops is learning how to say no in a sex positive way.
What would that be?
It would say, like, if I went up to someone and said, oh, I think you're attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, oh, well, I'm not really attracted to you.
Yeah.
And I ask, would you like to play with me?
Right.
They go, instead of just saying no, they say, well, I'm so honored that you find me attractive. And I'm really taken that you like me, and I feel this really deeply. But this isn't the right time for me to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at some other time, maybe never.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not right. The energy's not right for me to get involved with you. And that's acknowledging
But if you're really not interested, I think it's somewhat important to be really clear with that, and not in
it's
a mean
still
way,
being
but just
clear.
But just in the sense of if you really mean not now. Say not now.
Yeah.
But if you really mean no, don't say not now.
Yeah.
Because I've always had a real tick about that, people who say not now.
Yeah.
It's like,
and
well, what does that mean, you know?
Yeah. I can understand that. But it's also saying no in the sense of not saying I reject you, but I honor you because you found me attractive, and I honor the courage you had to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do it,
right?
But I still honor you,
right?
And
yeah.
it's saying no in an honoring way.
I do think that's possible. It's very possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if it's an absolute no, it can be done with honor
exactly.
and respect.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess one reason why I'm saying that is because, I mean, if somebody's really sort of like, has something about somebody, that if there's just nothing going to happen that night, they can get on with their evening.
Yeah.
Rather than kind of going, well, there's still a chance because they said not now. Maybe they mean in an hour.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it kind of cuts you loose mm-hmm. in a gentle, loving way so you can mm-hmm. get on with your evening.
When I say not now, the energy's not right, not now. Mm-hmm. I don't mean like within an hour or two. It's
well,
like
I know.
The energy's not. And maybe you need to specify
that. When you're really sort of, oh my God, you know, that little glimmer of hope can make you into a pest sometimes.
Yeah. And that's the other side of it is that I think part
of that. And I don't mean any of that, this in a mean way.
Yeah.
And all this can be done very gracefully and gently.
Well, there's also a dynamic, I think. Mm-hmm. When we live in a sex-negative culture, mm-hmm. it kind of promotes that kind of hunger
right.
people have.
Right, right.
When you get into a sex-positive culture, mm-hmm. then no isn't so...
You know, and I found, too, that there a lot of people are really all about hardcore sex.
Yeah.
And I found myself in situations where I would very much, I very much enjoy and am willing to be very sensual with someone yeah. and very much do some body exploration. Mm-hmm. But the hardcore sex spark is just not there between the two of us.
And that's definitely know, part of the temple.
So,
I mean, when we say
yeah, exactly.
sacred sex.
Exactly.
Sacred sex is not just about...
And that expands the whole boundaries of acceptance and rejection, just in the sense of just the sensuality aspect of it.
And like I say, a lot of times...
Because, I mean, sometimes sex is just an excuse to have somebody caress you and touch you and hug you.
Well, that's why I say sometimes what we facilitate is just doing an erotic body rub with one another.
There you go. Yeah.
And
exactly.
And having that be it.
So that yeah, you have that incorporated already. Yeah.
And one of the things we also emphasize in a lot of the workshops is that in our society we tend to be very goal oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to sex, the big goal is the big O.
Oh
the
yeah.
orgasm.
And the notch on the bedpost.
Yeah. You know, let's put the orgasm aside for a while.
Oh, well, I'm a big believer in that. Yeah.
Let's just explore touching one another, caressing.
Mm-hmm.
Let it take you where it's going to take you.
Mm-hmm.
If it takes you to an orgasm, great. But don't try to go there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Let it happen if it happens.
Well,
if it doesn't happen, let it go where it's going to take you, and it can take you to some pretty amazing places.
I think women taught me a lot about that.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing we do training on, when I do the priestess training, I train them in all these aspects.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the workshops I do is on, it's called the non-genital orgasm.
Mm.
And it's where you don't even touch your genitals.
Mm-hmm.
But through breathing techniques and some muscle techniques
mm-hmm.
and a whole series of things, I can take a group of people.
Wow.
And without even touching themselves on their genitals, bring them to full body orgasms, non-genital orgasms. And they're a little different. They're
how
not
wonderful. Yeah.
They're not like ejaculatory or sexual orgasms.
Yeah.
They're very different.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also very similar.
How wonderful. That sounds fascinating.
One of the workshops we do is on for men, teaching men how to have multiple orgasms and whole body orgasms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we also do a training for women to learn how to have ejaculatory orgasms.
Mm-hmm.
And
wonderful.
And
yeah.
So we go into, and there's a lot of wealth of information, especially in the Kuma Sutra and tantric sex.
Mm-hmm.
That can help us get more in touch with our full sexuality, not just
Right.
You know, because we live in a kind of gender dualist world, there's men, there's women.
Well, and like you said, the goal-oriented.
Different.
Yeah, and the goal-oriented thing, too. Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of the training, especially for the priests and priestesses, but it's also for people just coming to temple. Mm-hmm. We teach different techniques.
You know, this one of the things
about that, sexuality that aren't mainstream knowledge.
Right. Well, one of the things that struck me about a lot of what you're saying is, is that it, you know, it takes some time to do this stuff. And so that just the very process of doing these different rituals and these different mm-hmm. explorations, you would relax and slow down. And just by the very nature of relaxing to go back to your life, your everyday life, refreshed and energized by slowing, you know, taking the time.
Yeah. Another workshop that I do is called Guided Erotic Meditation.
Mm.
And that's where we take you on an erotic journey through meditation. And it can be very powerful.
I bet.
So there's a lot about the sacred sex temple that, you know, a lot of people, when they first hear it, they think, oh, everybody just gets together and has sex and
whap whap, thank you, bam bam, and whatever. Yeah,
and there's a bit of that going on, but
sure,
but quite a bit.
Well,
sometimes.
You know, I mean, you know, there certain evenings have just sort of a rowdy nature to them.
Oh yeah,
you know,
and then other times mm-hmm.
You're more languid. Yeah,
it's much more into the sensuality, mm-hmm. and other times it's learning new techniques about our bodies and how to get our bodies turned on sexually.
One thing that I was thinking of earlier, I was wondering if there's any aspect of it, like I worked at the Nob Hill Theater in the 70s in San Francisco, and there was a wonderful guy named Cliff Newman who owned and operated it. It was just an incredible person. And he always said, you know, I hired you for your energy. I hired you for your personality. So be yourselves and play whatever music you want. But I found myself in the position that people would come and have fun at the theater, and it was, you know, pretty mm-hmm. open atmosphere. And some of them who were maybe visiting from the heartland or whatever, they had been raised in a good whatever family, but they would kind of flip out.
Yeah.
They would kind of have done something and enjoyed it, and all of a sudden sort of scared themselves by how much pleasure they had had. Mm-hmm. And I found myself sort of having these funny little therapeutic sessions over the counter there in the front room, where I would actually help people process and get comfortable with what they had just done or what they were wanting to do and everything. And I was wondering, is there any of that goes
That's
on?
That's kind of built into each workshop.
Yeah.
I mean, we do a lot of interactive and
specifically where people's fears come up and they're really...
Well, we discuss the
They're
fears.
In the grip of... They do something and they're all of a sudden an alarm button goes off.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of the process of the workshops, is to kind of explore our fears.
Good, yeah.
And explore and name. There's a power in naming.
Right.
Once we name a fear...
Because, I mean, in a way, some of what we're talking about sounds like, oh, everybody can come do this, and it's all just sweetness and light the whole time. But people have to deal with very real, you know, deep embedded stuff as it comes up. And sometimes they need somebody there to kind of help them stay calm help them process.
That's also part of the job of the temple.
That's what I was
wondering.
Priests
and priestesses is, you know, there's times, I remember one time at temple, someone came out and, you know, just really troubled. So I kind of walked up to them and I said, you know, looks like you're kind of having some problems. Do you want to talk? And he said, yeah.
Great.
And he said, well, I was brought up Catholic. And, you know, I had a great time, and then I had an orgasm, and then all this guilt hit.
There you go.
Well, you know, that's, and we sat and processed and talked.
And one reason why I wanted to bring that up and clarify is because, you know, again, for people out there who are going, wow, this is interesting, just, you know, you will be taken care of. If you participate in any of this stuff, you will, at least in the context that Gigi is talking about in his sex temple, you will be well taken care of.
Oh, yes. And, you know, like I say,
so that can help your bravery quotient go up a little bit if you know you're going to be well cared for.
Uh-huh. And it's really all about learning to, or maybe relearning. You had talked earlier about when we were on break, when you were a child and things seemed much more free
for you. When I was a little kid, I was an extremely loving child. And, I mean, the whole idea that, you know, I should love men and women differently didn't even enter my head, really. I mean, in terms of just affection and all that. And then puberty came on like gangbusters, and all of a sudden there was all this conditioning and all these things of who I could love, who I couldn't love, and how I could love them, and well, you know, what conduit this had to go into, and blah, blah, blah. And then part of my process after I came out on all the different levels that I've come out was in a way relearning that sort of childlike, mindless affection for just people because they're wonderful, they're beautiful, you know, and then however it plays out. But the whole idea of just loving who's in front of you first, and then whatever proceeds from that.
And, you know, I remember as a kid playing doctor with some of the kids down the street.
Yeah.
You know, both the boys and the girls.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've always been kind of bi and bi-identified.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was before I even knew the words bisexual or knew all the boxes that we put around sexuality.
Yeah, because, I mean, my sexuality is mainly gay, but I've never been able to stay in the box with any of it.
Yeah.
You know.
But I think that's part of what taboo does.
Exactly.
And what myths do is it puts boxes around everything.
Exactly.
And part of what Temple's about is bringing that inner child back out and letting that inner child play again.
Well, in any notion of if you feel sexually attracted to someone and some kind of trigger goes up in your head says, no, I can't be attracted to them. Well, you are. So find some way of connecting with that.
Well, one of the things, and I'd like to ask you, maybe this would be the best approach, what is it that happens when you're attracted to someone?
That's quite a question, especially to pop, just come up with an answer with. I think first of all, I think it's partially karmic.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of made a cosmic date long, long, long time ago. And I think there's a chemical component, there's an energetic component. And there's just a certain spark where you kind of recognize each other. You sort of really you see the person, you recognize them, and something opens up. And before even doing things, starts joining. Regardless of their response, you're already joined to them in some way.
I think you kind of captured a big part of it for me with the word spark.
Yeah.
You know, there's that spark that you can see it in the eyes.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
It's that all of a sudden that brightness comes out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's before you even look between the legs yet. You know?
Right.
there's just that spark. And a big part of the ancient temples was to kindle that spark.
Right.
And let it flame.
Well, and I think
and
that's the thing of the experience, because I know when I was more into sort of, when I was younger, I'll say, there would be people that I would meet, and there would be a mutual attraction, and I would be able to see, recognize what they would enjoy that they didn't even know they were going to enjoy yet.
Yeah.
And really sort of, you know, I don't know, just, you know, I could see parts of them that they hadn't even seen themselves yet. And I still kind of can do that.
Yeah.
And not necessarily just in terms of sex, but, you know, I'm pretty good at seeing the perfected version of people.
Okay.
And then try to help them come along to that.
And it's, my
not,
next
and it's
question,
not me projecting something onto them. And that's been proved over time.
My next question, what is sex?
What is sex? Well, it's definitely partially mental, because I've always said that, you know, if you want to know what sex your sexuality is, what is in your mind at the moment of orgasm, and that is never lies.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know, there's so much that I consider sex that it's really hard to do a 25 words or less on that.
Okay. Let me throw this concept at you.
Okay.
Isn't sex part of the vehicle to bring about the sparkage?
Yeah.
And whatever that force of attraction is,
well,
sex is one of the vehicles to really...
Absolutely. Well, you know,
bond it.
You know, one of the things that I think happened to me was I do Native American stuff, and there was a particular prayer that I did, and part of my the answer of how to answer that prayer was to do a year of celibacy,
mm-hmm.
which was just a completely radical notion to me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, so I did 1 year of celibacy, and what I found out was that through all the sex I had had, I mean, and I've had a lot of it,
yeah.
and through all of that learning how to be intimate with people through sex, that I could be that intimate with someone and it not be physical at all. And that's, I'm not saying, and I don't want to divorce those two things, but what I'm saying is that to me, mm-hmm. part of sex is how to learn to be truly, truly intimate, and then that can carry into every meeting you have with anybody,
yeah.
anytime, any place, you know, over a counter buying, you know, a popsicle.
Mm-hmm.
You can be completely sensually intimate with the person standing there.
Yeah.
So is that a little too cosmic or?
Oh, not at all. I mean, part of...
But how I got there was through sex.
Yeah.
That's how I learned it. So I will never say, you know, that the two should be divorced.
Yeah.
And one's better than the other.
Well, you know, and I think there's a difference between just sex and sacred sex.
Yes, yes.
Big difference.
And, my one-word answer to what sex is?
Yeah.
Fun. Fun. It's just so much fun. Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the things that is kind of central is that we live in a touch-deprived society.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I have to, you know, that I've put in a lot of the writings is that, you know, it's a proven fact. If a human infant doesn't receive human touch, it will die.
Yes.
I think as adults... It's not critical for life per se, like in the sense of an infant, but I think it is critical for health and for mental health.
Absolutely.
And for spiritual health. When we become touch deprived, the sparkage starts dying.
Yeah.
That whatever inside,
mm-hmm.
and we start fading.
Mm-hmm.
I think
I do believe that. If you turn off your sexuality, you actually do start dying.
Yeah.
In essence.
And I'm saying sexuality in a broader sense than just
absolutely
intercourse.
I'm talking about if you try to divorce yourself from your sexual
yeah.
energy.
Yeah.
You know, just on the energetic level, whether
yeah.
you do anything, whether you do any actions or not, but
mm-hmm.
you've got to have your sexual energy
uh-huh.
at play in your being.
Yeah. And so that's one of the other kind of central themes of Temple is to bring people together where we can touch again.
Mm.
Where touch is
beautiful, beautiful.
Permitted and encouraged.
It's funny. There was a box full of scrapbooks in a closet at my mom's house, and I'd been wanting to bust it open because it was all sealed and everything. So the last week I did. And my mom and I sat there and looked at these, you know, baby books and scrapbooks from when my brothers and I were children. And there's all these cards, and it's like, hug so-and-so for me, give you so-and-so a kiss, and hug so-and-so. And my mom laughs. She goes, you know, we were always a big hugging family. The whole family was always hugging and kissing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think it shows in me.
Yeah.
You know? And mm-hmm. I'll blow my whole family.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that really exemplifies our culture is step into any elevator downtown.
Right.
And notice how people, the more crowded it gets, the more people scrunch up.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, you know, I used to bathe with my parents, when I, either my mother or my father.
Uh-huh.
And right, evidently, I bathed with them right up until the time that I can remember it.
Yeah.
But because I can kind of remember it. And I guess there was just a point where, okay, you're old enough to bathe mm-hmm. by yourself. But there was never anything weird or... Oh, you know, and on Sunday morning, we'd climb in bed to read the funny papers, and we would climb all over my parents. It was very, like, snuggly. It was
yeah.
very, like, you know, puppies and mama and papa dog, you know?
Oh, we're getting the wrap-up.
Oh, okay.
Well, boy, this segment has flown by tonight. Well, we've been talking about the Sacred Sex Temple, and for more information about it, and
I've learned. I mean, as much as I know, I've learned a lot from you tonight. We need to honor this man.
Do you go to EarthSpiritAlliance.org, and we will be running Sacred Sex Temple at the Maiden Awakens Festival.
All right.
So.
Thank you, Gigi, so much for bringing your wisdom to the show.
Uh-huh. As always.
To hear more queer music, see pictures of the artists, and listen to streaming audio of past editions of Queer Music Heritage, log on to J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.com. This is Queer Voice.
If you think HIV/AIDS is no longer a problem, think again. In Houston, every 8 hours, someone becomes infected with HIV. 1 in 90 Houstonians is HIV positive. There's still no cure, but you can protect yourself and others by getting tested and learning more about this deadly disease. You can help. Join AIDS Foundation Houston in the fight against HIV/AIDS on Sunday, March 12th for the 17th annual AIDS Walk Houston. With your participation, we can give thousands of men, women, and children a reason for hope. For more information about AIDS Walk Houston, call 713-403-WALK or log on to www.AIDSWalkHouston.org.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.